Portions of the day's programming are reproduced by means of electrical transcriptions or tape recordings.
Testing, testing, hot out, brown cow, 1, 2, 3, 4, testing. Hey, boss, you know, Ralph, I'm getting a little nervous out here. I don't know how you can keep so calm back there.
Get ready. 10 seconds. 5 seconds. Go.
Hey, I can't find nothing on the radio. Yo, turn to that station.
Your one definition of a friend is someone who's there when you need him. Well, I needed him and he's here. Ladies and gentlemen, my friend Elton
Jim.
Good morning, Elton Jim.
Elton Jim.
The one, the only, Elton Jim Toronto.
I'm back. Good morning.
Hello, teacher.
Hey, it's Roger B. Oh, my gosh. When I found out I was going to be filling in for Matt Bubala this morning.
You got real sick.
I know. I was, when you heard, I was always excited, but then I just checked on my Facebook page today, yeah. Or was it yesterday?
Yesterday.
Yeah. And I always, fingers crossed, that Roger Badish would be joining me. And sure enough, when you put a nice little thing up on Facebook there that that said that we were going to be working together, which was nice. I appreciate the promotion. Mm-hmm. And I was even more enthused. You created an actual little cartoon that said, remember?
Yeah. Well, yeah. That's one of my go-to.
Was that a GIF or a GILFIN? What do they call those?
GIFs.
What is
GIF?
It?
GIFs.
It's a GIF.
No, GIF.
GIF is the peanut butter.
GIF is peanut butter.
Right. It's a GIF.
GIF. GILF. GIF.
GIF.
The guy who invented them came out, I think, a couple of weeks ago and said, hey, everybody, it's pronounced GIF.
Yeah.
Not GIF.
Well, Curtis would know, our producer, because he's of the age.
He's of the GIF age.
He's the GIF age.
Yeah.
He's a GIFer. The GIFer. That's a good name. You're the GIFer now.
There you go.
People who remember Monday Night Football remember that Frank Gifford was the GIFer, but now we have a new GIFer.
Yeah.
And I'm going to actually say your name right. It's Curtis Koch, isn't it?
Yes, correct.
There you go. It's spelled like Ed Koch.
Or like the Koch brothers.
Or the Koch brothers,
but it's
pronounced Koch.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we have Curtis Koch with us. We have Roger Badish. I'm Jim Toronto filling in for Matt Bubala. But I wanted to say, so Roger was kind enough to create this GIF and put it on my Facebook page.
I didn't create it. I stole it.
Well, you stole it. Yeah. Or your emoji. What is that?
Emoji.
Emoji. Sorry. Yeah. There's a schwa in that, isn't there?
It's a what?
It's a schwa. Remember when you had spelling class?
Oh yeah,
the schwa, the E with the little thing around it.
Right.
In fact, we're going to be talking about the spelling bee. I've got some major problems with this year's spelling bee, my friend, and we will be talking about that later in the show.
Okay.
But so I wanted to say, so Roger creates this nice GIF, and it has this picture of a guy. Do you remember what it says on it? Like, it was some kind of funny little face.
A special bulletin or something.
Yeah, special
like that.
Bulletin. It says, I'm going to be joining Jim Toronto on WGN.
Yeah.
And so a few people then added comments. Oh, can't wait. What time? And then some woman said, don't care for Jim. Won't be listening.
Oh.
Thanks a lot. And I just, but you know what I did? I bit my tongue. I said my little high blood pressure little saying, pins and needles, needles and pins. It's a happy man that grins.
Oh.
Then I smiled and I said, what am I mad about? And I couldn't remember what I was mad about. Then my wife said, well, what you were mad about was that this woman doesn't like you.
It's so nice that she reminded me.
And then I just said, pins and needles, needles and pins, a happy man is a man that grins.
Sticks and stones may break my bones.
But names will hurt me. So,
no, I won't.
But what I did is I took a step back, and instead of coming back venomously, as many people will in the social media world, I just said sarcastically, thank you for your support.
Yeah.
So, you know what?
A very heartfelt thank you for your support.
And I, with I must say, an exclamation point.
Look at that.
So look at me.
A flourish, if you will.
But yeah, so good to be back with Roger. It's been a while since we worked together, yeah. So I'm having fun here. And Curtis, we've worked with a couple of times, so this is going to be have fun. We're going to be until 5 a.m. I don't know what you're doing till 5. I'm going to be here. Hopefully you will stay up with us. We've got a few things planned that should be fun. As I said, I've got a major beef with the Scripps National Spelling Bee, which took place a couple of weeks ago, the last week of May.
Mm-hmm.
And so I will talk about that. Let me just say that I'll just say one thing about that now as a teaser.
Okay, teaser.
TRAVESTY. Okay? For the spelling bee.
Right, okay.
Travesty.
I got it.
Origin?
Yeah.
Could you use it in the sentence? Are there any other pronunciations? Don't you ever watch the spelling bee? Those are like the three questions right. That the kids
you get
ask.
To ask. Sure.
Yeah. But yeah, this year I was not happy with the results, so we will talk about that.
Okay.
Also, obviously, with a nickname like Elton Jim, you would have to think, and you would be correct, that I have seen the film Rocket Man.
How many times?
Well, I just came back last week. In fact, a week ago today, right mm-hmm. now, I was in Amsterdam,
right,
seeing Elton John perform.
Number
193.
There you go.
Yeah. So can you only imagine how many times I've seen a movie that you can walk in and literally stay there all day?
Right.
Which I sort of did. I watched...
I missed the opening credits. We're waiting for the next showing.
Well, yeah. So I went on opening day. I saw there was a nice opening preview to the public. It wasn't any kind of special thing. It was a 2 weeks before it opened, they had a special preview that mm-hmm. the public can go to. So I saw it then, but I wanted to see it again, obviously. So on opening day, mm-hmm. of course, I went to the Oak Brook 12 at the noon show.
Mm-hmm.
And as luck would have it, by the time they show these movie trailers for 25 minutes before the movie's supposed to start.
And then you wonder why people are always late.
Yeah, so I get there at noon. The movie starts about 12:20. And then it gets done about 2:20, and mm-hmm. the next one starts at 3.
Okay.
So I said, you know what? I'm going to stay for the next show.
And the people cleaning up didn't kick you out?
Yeah, exactly. So here's the thing. So now I wait till the very end of the credits because
right.
I want to see. I always read the credits after a movie.
Mm-hmm.
So now I'm the only one there, and the guy walks in. And so he sees me, and I'm like, I can't stay in here because he's going to be, sir, you have to leave. Or if he sees me in the lobby, mm-hmm. like kind of loitering,
right?
He's going to go, you know, what the heck's this guy doing? Right. He was just already there. So I sat in the toilet for 25 minutes.
I was just going to ask if you went to the bathroom. I just knew it.
I hid in the stall. And I with my pants up, because I noticed that the door didn't go all the way to the down. So
none of them do anymore.
Yeah, so I didn't have to worry about having to pull down my pants to show that I was actually going. Yeah. But so I just sat in there for 25 minutes.
Yeah.
And then about 5 to 3, I walked out, flushed the toilet I was doing my business.
Wash your hands?
Oh, yeah. Whole thing.
Of course.
Oh, yeah. You know, brushed my hair.
Did you have a little portable, a little small spray of your...
Oh, well, speaking of that.
Uh-oh. Oh, that's enough.
It can't be an Elton.
Thanks a lot, Roger.
He
was going to do it whether I said anything or not. Seriously.
It cannot be an official Elton Jim show unless you christen it with a little spritz of Cashmere Woods. Thank you, Glade. And once again, I went to my Target, and there were only three. I should be getting a piece of this.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, if
no
I was
one has
on
contacted you yet?
No, if
this.
I was on the radio every day, I would be rolling in sponsorship money.
Of course,
because for the few times I'm even on, and I mention this, I think I'm having an impact.
I think so
because I went to Target, and
everybody who walks in the studio is impacted.
Yeah. And when I went to look at all the different flavors and all the whatever they call
the aromas,
them, the aromas,
one's eating that stuff.
The bouquets, if you will. There was linen was there,
right?
And forest. Mm-hmm. Those were packed to the gills. I had to go way in the back.
Well, because you're having an impact
to grab, and I grab my because what's nice at Target there, and I'm not getting any kickback from Target either.
No.
This is where I go.
No,
but they're only 99 cents there, which is nice. So
what?
I'll
a whole bottle.
Yeah, the whole bottle. Man. Yeah. So I'll go there.
Don't spray it on the microphone.
No, please. If you notice, I spray it away.
Yeah, the angle's a little weird here.
I spray it away.
Okay.
I spray it away.
All right.
But so I grab about five or six cans. So we are never we are never even at a hint of being out of Cashmere Woods. Never. Yeah. It's never. I've got two cans under the sink, and I've got 10 on the shelf that's on the stairs leading down to the basement.
Okay. So I can grab one right away. Sure, if you need it.
Yeah.
How does your wife feel about all that?
Oh, no, she loves it.
She loves it.
She's a major, as I said, the first time I ever found it, I fell in love with it as I sprayed it in the store and went, oh, this has a potential. Nice.
Now, did you do it like they do it with the aftershaves or the perfumes? Did you spray some in the air and then walk through it?
And I walked through it.
Yeah.
Well, no, here's what I did. So I brought one can because I'm like, okay, I want to nominate this as our new scent.
So it was a test can.
Yeah. So what I did, I didn't even tell her that I bought a new scent. And so she was upstairs and I kind of sprayed it up the stairs, just on the staircase.
Okay.
So it might waft upstairs.
Get in the ventilation system.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Maybe there's a nice little cross breeze happening. Although, of course, in my house, there's no air conditioning on. So
you got the windows open anyway.
The odds of that.
Right.
So I spray it up the stairs, and 2 seconds later, she goes from upstairs. She goes, "Wow, what's that scent?" And I said, "Why do you like it?" She goes, "Yeah." And I said, "It's Cashmere Woods."
And you go into a infomercial.
And guess what? It's our new scent.
Wow.
And now I would say this has actually been up. I would think it's now. I've been talking about this for at least 2-3 years now. Yeah. So anyway, what else? So the spelling bee I want to talk about. I talked about the Rocket Man thing. So, yes, I did stay. I have seen it. So I thought it might be fun. We're going to do a little pop culture club with Mick Kaler in a little while.
Okay.
And talk about now with the success of Bohemian Rhapsody. And now the success of Rocket Man, it's gotten great reviews. It's made over $100 million worldwide. What rock and roll biopic do you want to see? Who do you, what? Because you know that Hollywood is now going to start greenlighting all these. So I thought it'd be fun to talk about what next movie would you want to see about a rock star? And can we please all agree? The word is not biopic.
Biopic.
It's biopic.
Biopic is something like you can't see too well.
Yeah, or when you go to get your tumor tested, your biopic came back negative. Thank you. First of all, you're supposed to have, and I'm sorry, I didn't mean to make that joke with you, Roger. I apologize for that.
Right.
But doesn't it sound like a medical term?
It does.
You're supposed to have a hyphen. First of all, it's a biopic. It shouldn't be one word. I'm seeing it all over the place.
Bio, short for?
Biography.
Pic, short for?
Picture.
Motion picture.
Right. So biopic, so it's two words, and when I went to school, the hyphen was a connector.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't put the word together as one word, because then you do say biopic. But if you put bio hyphen pic, you can't mispronounce it.
Right.
It's a biopic.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to talk about our favorite biopics and who we might want to see make a film. Later on, I want to tell you about, I just went to Amsterdam.
Oh, yeah. I saw some of your pictures.
Oh, my gosh. I had a guy sitting next to me. Do I have to tell you this story?
Hey,
oh, my gosh.
And, for you.
Yeah, have I got a Toronto's travel for you?
Oh, boy.
So we'll talk about that. What else do I got? If we have some time, you know, today, Saturday morning or Saturday afternoon, today, I mean, it's kind of night, even though it feels like it.
Yeah.
What's going to happen here in Chicago and in several neighborhoods?
A lot of festivals.
The introduction of the electric scooter.
Oh, is that today?
That pilot program starts today.
So many thoughts on that.
And I have encountered these firsthand about a year ago. I was in Santa Monica, and that's where I first saw them. I'm not exaggerating. I sometimes have a tendency to do that. As you may know, if you've listened to me with any kind of regularity.
Oh, my gosh.
I was almost hit 3 times.
What?
By people on these scooters. Because,
on purpose?
Well, no, they're zipping. Well, I don't know. They may have listened to me on the radio. But they were zipping by so fast right around me that if I would have lifted my arm to scratch my nose, I would have knocked them out.
Yikes.
Yeah, so I want to talk about the scooters because, yes, you know, it looks great on paper. But the practicality of this, there are a lot of interesting things. Now, Curtis, you just said, what you have some thoughts?
Yeah, it's first off here in Chicago. Can we get like crossing the street and like getting the divvy bike stuff down before we get the scooters involved.
Because don't forget, these are electric.
Yeah.
These are motorized. They go 15 miles an hour. It might not sound like it's a lot, but it is.
Well, in this past winter, I went down to Nashville, and I was at the Blackhawks Predators game. And Nashville has the scooters, too.
Yeah.
And I also almost got ran over.
Yeah.
And it's especially troubling, especially on Broadway Street, right there in the heart, right by the arena where there's all those bars and stuff like that.
You get
somebody in the wrong hands, they're going to get in an accident.
So I know a lot of people are all excited about this. It's very hip. It's very cool. They're going to jump on these things. But there are a lot of hidden potential hazards and problems that I would like to talk about. In fact, we're going to take a quick break now. We'll talk to Roger, and he'll do his news. And then after that, we'll do some pop culture's talk. But I want to talk about this scooter thing, because it starts today, Saturday, in certain neighborhoods in the Northwest Side, Southwest Side. I don't think they're going to be actually downtown, thankfully. So, because we're already trying to dodge the segues, so now we have to dodge these too. But so we've got lots of things planned for today. Always, as usual, jamming 5 pounds of bologna in a 1 pound bag. I'm Jim Toronto, filling in for Matt Bubala. Stay tuned right after this. So we'll be right back. No switching. Jim Toronto with you here at WGN, 7:20 a.m. in the great city of Chicago. That's the strains of a new Bruce Springsteen song. I got so down and out in Frisco. New album just released yesterday, Friday, called Western Stars. So throughout the show, I'll be bumping back with some music. Of course, I love Elton John, as you know that, but I'm also a huge Bruce Springsteen fan. I've been a Bruce fan almost as long as I have been an Elton fan. And I would consider myself a major Springsteen fan. I've seen him 60-some times in concert, too, so...
Didn't I read somewhere they thought he might take up residency in Vegas for a while? Springsteen?
Really?
I thought I read that a day or two ago.
Well, you know what?
It was along with the announcement of the new album and everything.
Well, you know what? I think I know what you might be talking about. Greg Kot wrote a review of the new album, Western Stars,
mm-hmm.
and the headline said, in Vegas...
Maybe that's the one I saw.
Yeah, and basically he was making a point that the album sort of sounded like it should be played in a Vegas lounge.
I got you.
Yeah, okay.
Was
Roger,
he critical of it?
Yeah, he only gave it 2 out of 4 stars.
Ooh.
Yeah, but I understand your confusion, because I read that headline and I said, well, is he going to do a residency?
Yeah,
I thought the same exact thing. Yeah.
By the way, I had a question before you get on with what you're going to do in this segment. 193 Elton John concerts.
Yes, sir.
Do you think that you will reach 200 this year?
Well, I know how many tickets I have already in hand.
Oh, okay.
And I will not, because I am going to hopefully try to save 200 for a very special show.
Ooh.
And I'm waiting to see when or what that special show will be announced.
Okay,
sometime in the next year and a half, because the tour ends in 2021.
I got you. Okay.
So I will. I if everything goes according to schedule.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, that's the British pronunciation.
Yes, of course.
That's the royal we.
The royal.
According to schedule, I will probably be at 198 or 199 by the end of calendar year 2019.
Wow.
So then I will only have one or two left before the 200, but it doesn't matter. I'm going to keep going until...
Oh, I know.
I've always said, as long as he's playing, I'm going.
There you go.
So...
And it never gets tiring.
No. Well, hey, I hadn't seen him. I just saw him last week, right? That's
mm-hmm.
June.
Mm-hmm.
I hadn't seen him. Roger, I hadn't seen him perform since March. I mean, I had
an
the shake.
Eternity in Elton Jim years.
Yeah, I was going through withdrawals. I mean, yeah, I was having the shakes. So now I'm good until I think I'm going to see him in Wisconsin in October.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Cool.
So, you know, whatever.
Cool. I was just curious.
Oh, no, yeah, that's right. No, but everybody's been asking me now, because as I'm getting close to 200.
Right.
But I want to see if I can make the 200th show a special, you know, show, whether it's mm-hmm. at a cool venue or...
Is he going to bring you a cake from stage?
Well, you know, he has dedicated a song to me.
I know. I saw the video.
Yes, October 19th, 2018 in Madison Square Garden.
Yeah.
Not that I'm bragging, but I am.
Look for the video.
Yeah. Well, you know, Ange.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, Elton. You know, he dedicated the song to me. Yeah, you know, me and Thelma Lou were over at the concert. Hi, Thel. So let's go to the phones there. Is he ready to go? Can I just pull him up?
Is he there?
Yeah. Hey, Mick, are you there? No, I got to hit the button, right? Now you hit the button.
I'm here, buddy.
There he is. Hey, Mixter, what's going on?
Not much, you tell me.
Mick Kaler joining us here for the Pop Culture Club today. And I hope you're not sleepy, because I'd like you to hang around for a while.
That's fine.
Okay, cool. Because I want to talk about the biopics. Biopics.
Sure.
But there's some other things. One thing I really want to talk about is that you shared with me this week, which is really a cool story. A friend of yours had a birthday, and his wife hired his favorite band to play at his house.
Yeah.
I want you to share that story. What a great event that, and cool that must have been for both you as an attendee of the party, but obviously for him.
Yeah, this was really neat. My best friend, who I've known since I was 12 years old, Bobo, and his wife Tammy, of course, you know, I've known them forever. And Bobo's birthday was on Monday, and Bob and Tammy are getting ready to move to Oregon.
Oh, they are. Wow.
Actually, they moved out of their house, I think, this week, and they had most of the house cleared out. And Bob's birthday was on Monday, and he always told Tammy that his birthday wish was to have a certain individual play at his, you know, house. And we have always been, from the mid-'80s, big Bodines fans, okay? And between the two main guys of the Bodines, Sammy Giannis and Kurt Newman,
right,
we were always more, we liked both of them, but we were more preferential to Sammy's music, Sammy's songs, the ones that he wrote.
Well, you had to love Sam. You had to love Sammy's voice. Sammy, the Bodines, and I'll pull up a song so they can get an idea if people don't know the Bodines, but they were huge in the mid-'80s.
Oh, yeah.
And early 90s. They had the song from Party of Five.
Right.
Closer to Free.
Right.
But Mick and I and many people in the Chicago area, thanks to WXRT here in Chicago, played the heck out of their debut album, Love and Sex and Hopes and Dreams. And that still is a classic album.
Right.
Just a great rootsy kind of rock and roll band. But go ahead.
So anyway, you know, a few years ago, Kurt and Sammy split off. And Kurt actually took the name of the Bodines. So Sammy, when he goes out and plays, it's just Sammy Giannis and his, you know, trio of musicians. And anyway, a few weeks ago, we got a call from another one of our friends, Mark Vasco, and a good friend of Bobo's as well. And Marco has seen Sammy play his solo shows many times, and he was going to be kind of the connection to this because Tammy wanted to hire Sammy and his band to play Bob's birthday party. And she found out what it was going to cost to do that for Sammy and his three guitarist, bassist, and drummer to come down and play a show. And she arranged a surprise birthday party for Bobo on Monday. And we all showed up in the backyard. Sammy and his band showed up at about almost 7 o'clock, and Bob was going to show up about a half hour later after dinner with his wife and be surprised. And sure enough, he was stunned and amazed. It was a backyard party. Sammy and his band set up on Bob's backyard deck and played a ton of Bodine songs as well as some of Sammy's solo stuff. Everybody had backstage passes.
Those were very... I saw the pictures. Yeah, I saw the pictures that you posted. That was a cool idea to make the laminates.
Yeah, and they did that too, and Sammy and his band, like I said, they played mostly Bodine songs, but some of Sammy's solo stuff too, and there was a party for maybe about 75 people, and everybody just loved it. And again, to have someone whose music you've been listening to for over 30 years play right there in front of you, and you get to meet him and hang out with him for a little bit afterwards and do all that, it was just a fantastic night. It was a great way to close out Bob's living in Illinois.
It was so cool to see some of the pictures that were posted, that you posted, because I interviewed them back, 30? How this scares me. Probably 32 years ago.
When their first record came out.
For their first record, and, you know, they were probably, I mean, they're probably around our age.
Yeah, maybe a year or two older, but yeah. The same. Yeah.
And so when I saw, when I met them, they were, in their early 20s. And I had not seen them live, and I have not seen Sammy Yanis in perform in many years. And when I saw the picture, I went, oh, my God, who's that guy?
He aged, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he had gray hair, and, I mean, is he bald? Because he had a cap on.
Balding on top, yeah.
Yeah, I was like, oh, my, I didn't know who that was. And they went, wait a minute, it's got to be him because he's in the middle of the picture.
Yeah, well, the funny thing is, Jim, Sammy's voice, and, he does have a distinctive singing voice.
But here it is. There it is.
Yeah. His voice has not changed at all.
Really?
Yeah, got that distinctive, kind of pitch to it.
A little falsetto,
His band is really good. His guitarist is a guy named Sean Williamson, who not only plays regular guitar, he also plays steel guitar.
Oh, nice.
And some of Sam's solo work has a country shuffle feel to it, so it really fit. And, again, it was just a great night. Bob and Tammy were dancing on the deck for some of the songs, and everybody else who were, obviously not as big of fans as us, but they really liked the music. And then they're like, oh, I know that song, or I know this song. And, again, it was just a fantastic night. Well, it was a great time.
I told my wife that story, and she said, yeah, sure. She's like, you have to like, a guy who is still so popular, I could never afford him to come to our house.
Yeah, your wife has to win the Powerball or the lottery for you for even consider to hire Elton for your house.
Yeah, she's like, how come you couldn't like Steve Forbert?
Or Robbie Fulk.
Yeah, like that, or Marshall Crenshaw. Don't you want to have him at your house?
Marshall Crenshaw, she could probably swing, right?
Yeah, right, exactly. But, really, that must have been so cool. And I saw the pictures. Not only was it cool to see him just kind of posing on the staircase, at your friend's house, but the really cool picture was the band set up on the deck.
Right there on the deck.
Yeah.
The sliding glass door by the kitchen. And it was funny because when the show, was over and he finished up and everything, they went into the kitchen and there was a spread of some Portillo's food. And when I went back there to say hi to Sam after the show, I said, oh, is this in your concert rider?
Right.
He goes, no, we just asked for sandwiches. You guys brought this stuff, which is great. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, it was just a cool thing. I mean, most people just have a couple of a grill.
Yeah.
A couple of chairs.
Right.
And
a tiki torch.
Yeah, a little, picnic table. And there was this cool, drum kit and guitars all set up. I was like, wow, that was very cool.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was a very memorable night. And like I said, just, and again, our friend Marco set up a lot of that as far as being the conduit. Tammy paid the price as far as the performance fee for everybody. But Marco even went out and got the Portillo's food ahead of time. He got the whiskey and the beer for the band. I mean, he covered it all. I said to Marco, I said, you know what? Maybe you should be a concert promoter.
Yeah.
Book these little things in the backyards for people, for some of these artists.
I have to ask this because it's a trivia question. Does Sammy, how does he say, Yanis?
Yanis, yeah.
Yeah. Does Sammy Yanis like his Portillo's beef dipped or dry?
It looked like it was dipped to me.
He had it dipped. Nice. Well, he's from Waukesha. The Bodines are from Waukesha, Wisconsin. They're Midwestern boys.
Yeah, that's right. Now Kurt is down in Austin, Texas, where he moved with his wife a few years ago, and he's been based out of there. But, yeah, Sammy is up here in Milwaukee. In fact, I actually asked him if he's going to be playing many shows this summer. He said not a lot of public shows because he's working on more solo material that he's recording. And then he told me, he said, really, these private shows like this pay pretty good money. So
nice.
We're doing a lot of these.
Yeah. the Bodines were, as I said, they were in the mid-80s, about 85, 86. They were a huge critical and cult following that they had for their first album. It was produced by T-Bone Burnett, so it had a very good pedigree. And they had a couple of albums after that that didn't do as well. They went for more of a commercial sound, which kind of disappointed me. But then, as I said, in the early 90s, they did have that song Closer to Free, which was the theme song for the Party of Five show. But here was a band that really, I mean, my gosh, I thought they had all the earmarkings of just becoming a huge, huge band.
Absolutely. The songwriting
of
those guys were great.
And, it's so much about timing and the right sound at the right time. And so many factors go into it. And when it really is a crapshoot when you see these bands that have become these huge phenomenons, international stars.
And it's weird because you don't want to say that in front of Sam, but you're thinking, man, you guys should have been so much
I know.
You know, but it's true. And the one thing that I've always said, again, Love and Hope and Sex and Dreams came out in like 86. If those guys had come out about 2.5-3 years later, when the country music thing had really hit with Garth Brooks and all that, those guys would have been on that wave for sure.
Yeah, because see, they had more of a rootsy rock sound, and yet they were they were coming out right in the middle of the entire at the pinnacle of the new wave synthesizer British bands. You know,
exactly. And the other thing that you have to remember, like you said, they had this Midwest success. They were on Letterman a couple of times.
Oh, yeah.
They toured with U2. Well, I remember seeing them at the Chicago Theater two nights in a row. They used to sell out the Aragon Ballroom.
They sang
a lot of big shows. And then, of course, in Milwaukee, they would headline at Summerfest at the Marcus Amphitheater.
And they sang backup on Robbie Robertson's solo album.
That's right. They rubbed shoulders and mixed with a lot of different big artists.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they all thought the same thing, like, you guys are going to be really big.
Yeah.
And it just never kicked in like that.
Yeah. Well, I'm talking with Mick Kaler here at WGN 720 AM. Jim Toronto filling in for Matt Bubala. We'll take a quick break. Be right back. No switching.
There's a lot you've been following that feud that Jim Gaffigan and I had in the Enquirer and other places, but I'm glad we were able to make up.
We moved on.
Yeah?
This is going to be the best Father's Day this weekend.
What is it like for you with five kids?
Disappointing.
Yeah, do you get a lot of stuff? Not so much.
First of all, these kids, they don't get me anything. They don't even, like when I was a kid, you'd make your dad junk.
Mm-hmm.
They don't even make junk anymore.
They don't even give you crap you can throw out. Like something that macaroni glued onto something. Nothing like that?
There's too many kids at school that have weed allergies. So.
The Steve Cochran Show.
Well, you're nothing more than a warped, twisted old radio DJ.
I would. Oh, you bastard.
On 720 WGN.
Hi, it's Wendy Snyder here. Are you currently taking a daily probiotic? Well, you should be, and not just any probiotic. Take the world's best. It's Natron's Healthy Trinity. My family and I take Natron's Healthy Trinity every morning. Here's the Natron difference. Decades ago, Natron was founded by Natasha Trenev, the mother of all probiotics. She's a 50-year veteran in the field of probiotics, and her company guarantees 100% potency for all their products. They meet the highest international standards for quality, safety, and manufacturing. And Natron's probiotics come with 30 years of focused, rigorous scientific research and technology from leading scientists and researchers in the field of probiotics. While the industry of probiotics has exploded, they're not all created equally. Natron's Healthy Trinity is serious probiotics for people who take their health seriously. Go to Natron.com or the probiotic cooler section at Whole Foods, Fruitful Yield, or your favorite health food store. That's Natron.com, Natron's Healthy Trinity. Others promise Natron and delivers.
This is Rokan, the outdoors, that perfect spot, a place to relax, catch a breath of fresh air, or just stare out over a cup of coffee or a glass of wine. What if you had that every day, not just on vacation? With Arkadeck, you can. Your dream spot could be your deck, or maybe your screen porch or patio with an outdoor kitchen or a fire pit. Yes, fire pit. You've earned it. And Arkadeck's design professionals create solutions that blend form, function, and affordability. Go to their website, architectofchicagoland.com. Get inspired. Your backyard might not seem like much now, but Arkadeck's designers will transform your space into a personal refuge. Why Arkadeck? Because their professional staff is focused on design, quality, and service. They're the best creator of outdoor spaces in Chicago. Take it from me. It's the best thing I've ever done for my home. Don't miss out. Start planning to enjoy your summer right now. It all starts with a visit to architectofchicagoland.com. That's architectofchicagoland.com.
Hello, Orion here, and my friends over at Gary Lang Cadillac are excited to celebrate summer, and I would like to invite you to see McHenry County's largest inventory of new cars, trucks, and SUVs. You're certain to find the right Cadillac for your summer travels, like the new 2019 Cadillac XT5. Folks, this car is a must-see. Not only is it beautiful, it's versatile and spacious. Plus, the sales professionals at Gary Lang Cadillac are top-notch. Rest assured, you will leave Gary Lang Cadillac 100% satisfied. Believe me, I've been part of the Gary Lang Cadillac family for more than a decade. They are a name you can trust to find you the right Cadillac at the right price right now with service you can depend on. Gary Lang Cadillac, just minutes away on Route 31 in McHenry, online at GaryLangCadillac.com. And remember, if it doesn't say Gary Lang on the back, you probably paid too much.
Now available on WGN Plus, the latest business news from Crain's Chicago Business. I'm Amy Guth, and this is Crain's Daily Gist, the daily business headlines, plus interviews with business leaders and reporters. Your daily download Monday through Thursday, hosted on WGN Plus.
Jim Toronto filling in for Matt Bubala this morning. He'll be here till 5 a.m. And I've got on the phone with me Mick Kaler. We are talking about some pop culture issues and topics. We will continue that. But I've got someone else on the phone here, Mick, who we both know. And this is a very interesting, you know, spur-of-the-moment call. How's this name from the past, Mick?
Okay.
Tony LaBarbera.
Tony.
Tony, are you there?
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good. How you doing?
It was the strangest thing. I listen to WGN late at night all the time, and there's a sort of a very weird kind of anniversary between all of us happening here. And I was just thinking, I was actually thinking about Mick and you guys can help fill in something in me. There was another guy named Dave that used to be part of our little pack that was an A&R guy.
Dave Ross.
Yeah.
Dave Ross. That's, I could not remember his name to whatever, but it was 25 years ago this month that there was a guy that was a mentor of ours, of all of us. His name was Lee Swanson.
Right.
And 25 years ago to this month, if my calculations are correct, he passed away.
Wow, and has it been that long?
It's been that long.
Yeah, I should mention. I should mention that Tony was a. I don't know if you still are. It's been a long time since I've been in contact with you, but you certainly were a very active and busy concert promoter and big force in the local music scene here in Chicago.
A Bill Graham, if you will, of the Midwest.
And Mick and I met Tony. We both were at we met in college on our college radio station at Elmhurst College, and then Tony was a friend with a person who was a friend of Mick's as well, and I met as well this gentleman called Lee Swanson, who was also very active in the local Chicago music scene for a while. He actually managed Steve Dahl in his band, and sadly I think Lee was in his early 40s when he passed away from cancer. I wasn't aware it was 25 years already. Wow.
Didn't that time fly by like that? Isn't that crazy?
Unbelievable. Yeah.
And to further explain, Lee was...
Month, and I was just thinking about it, and then I listened to the radio, and the two of you guys are on together. I'm like, oh, my God.
Kind of kismet, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, very cool.
And again, Lee was this guy who... Like with Jim and I in our college, you know, radio career, and then we started doing some record hop dances and hanging out with bands and things. Lee was this guy who was just plugged into everybody. If you needed to know something about someone, he was almost like a pre-Google era search engine to get you linked up to people. And Tony, I'm sure he helped you many times in, you know, situations or things that you had questions on as well.
Well, I used to run something called the Chicago Rocker, which was the local version of the Illinois Entertainer.
I remember that, yep.
And Jim wrote for them for
Yes,
a while,
I did.
Right?
Yes, I did. Definitely did, yeah.
And recently, over the last, you know, few years or whatever, I actually started being their promotion director for a while. I'm not doing that now, but I did that for a while with you know, as I went on through things. I still promote bands. I still manage bands. I still do all that kind of stuff. I'm
very
still
cool.
very, very into doing it.
Yeah.
It's just it's just like I said, I just sort of, I hear the two of you guys on the radio.
He came across like that. Well, you know, the one thing I'm glad to hear about Tony is that he's still working with musicians and bands, because nowadays, between, you know, internet and social media and DJs and whatever, you wonder if there's still live music out there. It's good to know there still is, you know.
Well, the one thing I have to always remember that I'm reminded of Lee Swanson almost on a regular basis, daily basis, is that he used to own a record store back in the 70s.
The Record Gallery, yep.
It was in the Elmhurst area, correct?
Right, it was on Elmhurst on York Road, called the Record Gallery, yep.
And so when I got to know him, and he got to know me, and he found out I was this big Elton John fan, he gave me, at this time I was blown away by this, because I had never seen this before. Now I see it all the time on eBay, but I had never seen this. He gave me this very cool promotional pin, like a button, from Elton John's Rock of the Westies album from 1975, which is one of my just, treasured possessions. I love this pin because it's one of my favorite albums. And so every time I look at that pin, I always think of Lee.
Yeah.
And so I did not know it was that long, but I certainly do think of Lee. And Tony, I'm sorry I have to run and do news right now, but it's so great to hear from you. And
yeah.
I'm glad you called in, and I'm glad you had the radio tuned to 720.
I just wanted to say hello to you guys, and it just like you said, kismet. Really, it took me by surprise.
Well, but, very cool.
Great to hear from you, Tony. Cool.
Thanks
very
a
cool.
lot. Right.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, sometimes the stars just align right. You know, who would have thought that at 2 in the morning, somebody that we haven't spoken to in decades would hear us? How cool is that, huh?
Yeah, that's the power of radio right there, bud.
Okay, so hang on, Mick, and after the news, we'll continue our Pop Culture Club discussion. What I want to talk about with the new Rocketman film out, the success of Queen's Bohemian Rhapsody film, what next biopic of a rock star do you want to see, whether it's someone current, whether it's someone in the last 20 years, or maybe it's someone from the last 50 years, or maybe it's someone from the last 80 years. Who knows? What would make a great biopic? You know, Hollywood now is going to be looking at all the lives of popular rock stars and making movies based on the success of both Rocketman and Bohemian Rhapsody. So I thought we'd talk to Mick about that. And I'd love to get your suggestions as well. Phone number always open to you at 312-981-7200, or same number if you want to text along. Roger, are you still there, my friend?
I are here.
I am sorry I'm so 5 minutes late, but my gosh, I have not spoken to that guy in probably 25 years.
I can imagine.
Isn't that wild?
I've been in situations like that.
Yeah.
Over my decades, and it's always like blows your mind.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
That's what I love. I love about live radio. I have a podcast. I do it every week, but you know, it's recorded. You don't have that interaction, and this is a perfect example of the intimacy and the urgency of live radio. That's why I love it so much.
I'll give you another example. Exactly what you just were talking about. When I was teaching at Downers Grove North High School, we started a local band TV show that we did live after school, and surprisingly, it was on cable, so it was only within the Downers Grove area, and a record promoter, or band promoter, worked for some management company, happened to be staying at a hotel in the area, and had been flipping channels, and saw one of the bands the one night that we were doing the show.
Wow.
And called up, I'm not kidding,
wow,
called up and wanted to talk to them. And they have gone on to record. I'm not kidding.
How cool is that?
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, it's just any kind of opportunity, and that's why I always subscribe to the adage that whenever you are doing something in public, mm-hmm, make sure you do it the best you can. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter if it's 2 in the morning or 2 in the afternoon, because you never know who is listening.
That's right.
And so that is something to always keep in mind, especially if you're a broadcaster out there. It is about 2:07. Here are the sounds that matter. The top 5 at 5 from the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantes. Weekday afternoons on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. It's 2:08. Here's the news. They still ride and roll. Our American brothers cross the line, bring the old ways with them. Do not go western stars are shining bright again. Jim Tirano filling in for Matt Bubala this morning. Started at 1 o'clock, be here till 5. Hope you'll stay tuned. If you've liked what you've heard this far, just wait till you see what I've got planned for the next 3 hours. Song you're hearing underneath my voice right there is the title track from Bruce Springsteen's new album called Western Stars. And it's a departure for Bruce. It's if you are familiar with the music from the late 60s and early 70s of the songwriter Jimmy Webb and some of the songs that he did with Glenn Campbell, like Wichita Lineman, or By the Time I Get to Phoenix, or other singers like Harry Nilsson, or Roy Orbison, there's kind of this operatic, orchestrated, lush, big, cinematic sound to this album. Huge departure of what you're used to hearing his solo music, either very stripped down or obviously his music with the E Street Band. But this is an interesting album, and it's going to take a few more listens for me to get warmed up to it, but I'm sort of beginning to like what I hear. Hey, Mick on the phone here. Mick Kaler, have you heard any of the Bruce Springsteen album?
Just a couple of the tracks that you're mentioning, because they were on YouTube, so I haven't gotten the record yet. But yeah, I've heard this sound, and it's unusual.
Yeah, it's a total departure from what he did, which is, I guess, which he's done, which is in some ways a good thing. An artist is always looking to reinvent himself and to push his boundaries. But, you know, once again, we the fans always like to hear the artist in the way that we first heard them. And so there's always that push and pull when a music artist especially decides to try something different. The fans are always a little skeptical and a little less a little less forgiving when new album comes out and it doesn't sound exactly the way they expect it. But this new album called Western Stars by Bruce Springsteen is getting some overall very good reviews. So it's up to the listener, I guess.
And yeah, it's funny because if you remember late 80s, before Tunnel of Love came out, there had been rumors that Bruce had been working with some country musicians with steel guitars and a little more of a twang sound, which this really isn't so twangy. And then he kind of abandoned that and went into the Tunnel of Love genre, you know, the music that was there. But it was funny because if you remember at that time when he was touring, all of a sudden it was the bolo ties and the cowboy boots. So he had the look.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But he didn't really have the sound.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like I said, I think it's certainly worth listening. Anytime a major artist like Bruce Springsteen puts out an album, I think it's worth listening to. So we'll see what. But I love strings, and I love orchestrations, and I love the music of Jimmy Webb, and especially as I said, some of those classic songs that he did with Glenn Campbell in the late '60s, early '70s, like Wichita Lineman and
By the Time I Get to Phoenix.
So yeah, if you like that kind of sound, this album is kind of an homage to that, as well as kind of like Burt Bacharach with the horns and the lush orchestration. So that's this kind of the sounds of Western Stars. And I'll be playing some songs, like I said, coming in and out of commercials to give you a little taste of that throughout the show. But what I wanted to talk to Mick today in the Pop Culture Club segment here is, as I said, the popularity of the biopic, the rock biography picture, thanks to the Bohemian Rhapsody film that won an Academy Award and made almost $1 billion worldwide, which is outrageous when you think about it. And now the popularity of the Elton John biography, Rocket Man. What, you know, Hollywood is going to green light. They're going to start going back. All the Hollywood producers and all Hollywood studios are going to just go back to their old album and CD collections and take a look at some of the people that they used to listen to and say, well, maybe we can make a movie about this person. Or that person, because, you know, at Hollywood, once something becomes popular, then there's 15 different variations on it. So
they're going to beat it to death, exactly.
Yeah, so I thought it would be fun to just talk about some of the rock biopics that we might want to see, or that we might think have a really good chance of becoming a reality, just because of not only the popularity of the artist, but also potentially the dramatic story that they have. The good thing about rock and roll stories in terms of the personalities is that they all have a great story. There's very few rock stars that have a pure ascent to the top without any problems, whether it's financial, drug, alcohol, relationships, you name it. Rock stars' lives seem to be perfect to make a movie out of.
Yeah, a lot of drama for sure.
Yeah. So before Mick and I sort of trade around, I did want to open the phones to this. The phones are always open to you guys, 312-981-7200. Let's take call number one here, Roosevelt. Or is it Roosevelt? You tell me.
Either way, it's okay.
Well, what do you say? Because, you know, I say Roosevelt.
That was going to be it, Roosevelt. I rarely get called Roosevelt, but most people...
Well, you know what? So Franklin Roosevelt was the cousin to Theodore Roosevelt. But, and this is true. So Franklin said Roosevelt, his part of the family said Roosevelt, and Teddy Roosevelt's family said Roosevelt.
I guess if you want to be really, really technical, double O would be pronounced Roo, I guess.
Right. So what are you called at home?
Roosevelt,
right.
Yeah.
Now, does anybody, like, do you remember the football player from the LA Rams back in the 60s, Rosie Greer?
Oh, yeah, I grew up in that period. Yeah.
So does anybody call you Rosie?
Not really.
No?
Rarely.
Well,
I mean, rarely. One out of maybe 100 people call me Rosie.
Well, guess what? It's going to be 2 out of 100.
Oh, there you go.
Because I'm calling you Rosie.
All right,
Rosie. So who would you like to see a movie made? What rock star would you like to see a movie be made?
You know, what's funny about this subject is that I grew up in the 60s and 70s, and I was always into really hard rock and British rock, and that's exactly my point, that it's funny how the two that they made movies out of are British, and I'm going to go with the same theme. Ozzy Osbourne, Bobby Phillips.
Oh, God.
Perfect.
Yeah. While he's still alive, and Sharon could probably remember more than he can.
Right. But Sharon!
So, I mean, he went from... I remember when I was a kid, and, you know, everybody just loved Ozzy and Black Sabbath, and the cult, and he was such a cult figure. And then to go from that to all the drugs and all the drinking, and like you mentioned before, and the drama that surrounded Ozzy, and then I believe everything is owed to Sharon, because she's the one that brought him back in line. And while I was waiting on the phone, I thought of a perfect one too. Eric Clapton. I mean, he was with the Yardbirds.
Oh, perfect.
He was with the Yardbirds. He was with Cream. He was with Blind Faith. Derek and the Dominoes. So, and he lived more of an interesting life, because he had brush with the Beatles, with stealing George Harrison's
right, Patty. Yeah, I mean, Layla. The song Layla is written about Patty
Absolutely.
Boyd, who at the time was married to George Harrison, and then they wound up getting divorced, and he then married Patty Boyd, and then he divorced her.
Yeah.
The other thing about Clapton is you've got the drug and drink issues, mm-hmm. and, you know, sadly, later on in his life, the loss of his young son, Connor, too.
Right,
You got a lot of drama there.
Yeah, the song Tears in Heaven was basically written when, after his son, Connor, fell out of a window of an apartment building.
And what other artists can you say? He was with, I forgot, he was with Delaney and Bonnie also.
Right.
He was with the Yardbirds. I mean, this guy was hot. Yeah. I mean,
No, remember? Clapton. No, you've got you. Clapton is definitely ripe for a film. There's no question. As he said, the script is already written. I mean, there's no need to add any kind of drama. I mean, and the music soundtrack would be amazing. But as you said,
sure.
And the good thing is that you also so sadly so many rock star stories end in death. You know, with a drug overdose or something like that. But at least Eric Clapton's would end on a nice redemptive note because now he is clean, and so that would actually be a nice ending.
And while he's still alive, I mean, he could possibly co-op, you know, all these stories that he could, you know, contact them. And but, I mean, this guy, I mean, remember that famous picture of Clapton as God. I mean,
which he hated, right.
Yeah, that in England in the late 60s, somebody had graffitied a wall that said Clapton is God, and he's always hated that, and he's always tried to distance himself and always tried to you know, play that down, because he is, at the end of the day, I mean, he's one of the great guitarists of all time, but he certainly is also trying to not put himself on that kind of a
And also,
level.
Guys, he went on his own also, and he hung around Florida and all of the southern rock, so he picked up on that kind of music with southern rock. So he covered all the fields, basically hard rock with Cream, and then you had that southern rock aspect with Delaney and Bonnie, and on his own, come to think of it, and he has some fantastic background singers also. While he was doing all these albums on a solo career, so.
That's a great one. Thank you, Rosie.
I wanted to get back to Rosie's comment about the Ozzy Osbourne story.
Uh-huh.
And if they did it, they would have to have subtitles for everything that Ozzy says.
Well, I don't know what you mean, man. I don't know what you mean, man. I mean, you know, I don't know what you're talking about, man. I mean,
to be like, okay, this is an English-speaking movie, but by the way, we're going to have to put subtitles to show you what Ozzy's really saying.
Well, I know what you mean, man, because Sharon is over there, and she's asking me what to do, and I don't know what to do, but I know what you're talking about, because I'm trying to... I make sense as far as I'm concerned.
Show, the Osbournes.
Of course, as far as I'm concerned, I always make sense. So I don't know what you're talking about, man.
I remember watching that show, and Ozzy had been given a new remote control that would run his TV, his stereo, his internet, and his media room. Watching him work that remote was like watching a monkey doing a math problem.
I don't know what you mean, man. I don't know what you're talking about, man. But all I know is that I think it'd be a great idea, and I think if anybody could put the movie together, I think it'd be Sharon. So, you know, so screw you then, okay?
That's funny.
Yeah, we'll take a quick break. You can hang around, can't you, Mick?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, because I want to talk about, I mean, because we've up to this point, we've only talked about one movie.
Right.
One possible movie.
Because
so
I got a couple of ideas.
Good. So we're going to take a quick break, then we will do Roger with the news, and then we'll come back with Mick Kaler, whose work you can hear on a daily basis or regular basis on the WGN Morning News, because Mick regularly contributes parody songs based on what's going on in the news to the WGN Morning News. So you can hear Mick's work on a regular basis there. It's not just that he's my friend. There's actually a legitimate reason he's on here.
That's right. I got a tie-in here, okay?
There you go. So we'll take a quick break. We'll be back with Roger the News, then we'll continue the Pop Culture Club with Mick Kaler. But right now, it's Jim Toronto filling in for Matt Bubala. No switching. Elton Jim filling in this morning for Matt Bubala. Be here till 5 a.m. That's a new song from Bruce Springsteen's new album, Western Stars, which was just released yesterday, Friday. And that's one of the first singles that was released a few months ago, called Hello Sunshine. As you could said, I said earlier, it's kind of got that big, lush, cinematic sound. It almost feels like a spaghetti western, if you remember some of the classic Sergio Leone, Clint Eastwood westerns of the 60s, like boy, what am I thinking?
Good and Bad and Ugly.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, what are some of those?
A Fistful of Dollars.
Fistful of Dollars, right, exactly, yeah.
For a few dollars more. Yeah, I think Bruce's album is going to sell well in Montana, okay?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that big sky kind of feeling.
Big sky, definitely. Jim Toronto with you here this morning, filling in for Matt Bubala. On the phone, I've got Mick Kaler, and we are doing a segment here I like to call the Pop Culture Club. It's kind of a playoff, a play on words, if you will. Pop Culture and Culture Club. And speaking of that, we were talking about biopics in the rock world now with the popularity of Rocketman film that is currently out now, the Oscar winner from last year, Bohemian Rhapsody, about Queen and Freddie Mercury. And we're saying, well, what kind of movie, what rock star movie would you like to see? Because you know that Hollywood now is going to totally jump on the bandwagon and start digging through all their old album collections to see which stars should have a movie made about them. And speaking of the Pop Culture Club, I'm going to mention a name that might surprise you, but I think it's valid. I think a Boy George movie would be interesting.
You know, I saw him interviewed, I think it might have been at the Elton John Rocketman.
Yeah, he was there, yeah.
And I think there is some talk about doing one because of his being such a colorful character. Again, we're talking about drama with, super popular, then all of a sudden falling off the face of the earth, and weight issues and drug issues and the androgyny and all that stuff. So that'd be a good fit.
Yeah, I mean, think about, I mean, now, I mean, the idea of being, you know, coming out and talking about your homosexuality, it's nothing. I mean, we've got gay marriage now. So, I mean, that issue and that, you know, that entire topic has totally changed within the last 10 years, but certainly in the last 30 years. But Boy George in the early 80s played a major role in bringing kind of androgyny and maybe even transgender, or just this kind of blurred line of sexuality into the mainstream through the videos that he did with Culture Club and his look, which, as we talked about before, was androgyny. So, yeah, I think from the cultural standpoint, that topic, I think, would be interesting. And as you said, he also, as many rock stars do, every rock star we may mention here is always going to talk about the drugs, the struggle, the alcohol. I mean, it's almost like a playbook.
Sure.
So who else would you have a movie about?
About it, and you know, obviously, like you said, you have to have somebody who is well known enough where people say, oh, I'd like to know more about that artist. And you may know a little bit about that artist or that band, but you don't know a lot, and you know the songs. Again, you got to have a good soundtrack, and again, as you said, drama. And I got to be honest, and it's not just because I'm a big fan of theirs, I think there needs to be a biopic on the Eagles.
Oh, there's no question. I've got a whole list here, and the Eagles are on my list.
I mean, I thought about it, and it's like, look at Don Henley's in Texas growing up, Glenn Frey's in Detroit. They converge on the California scene in L.A. They start playing for Linda Ronstadt's band after they fizzle out of their little solo careers and all of a sudden realize, hey, maybe together we can do something. They form the rest of the band. As you said, you know, there's drinking, there's drugs, there's band changes as far as people leaving the band, and a lot of drama and strife within the band.
And then amazing success with Hotel California, and then they break up.
And not only do you have that, then you've got Joe Walsh with the, you know, raging problems he had with drinking and drugs, and then the comeback. That's the other part. You know, look at the, well, you need that, I don't want to say just always a happy ending, but you need a comeback, a resolution to everything they've been through. The band doesn't work together for almost 20 years, and then all of a sudden they go back out and are bigger than ever. And then you got Glenn Frey's passing at the end.
Right. Yeah, no, there's no question. And then to top it off, as a nice little closure, now you've got Glenn Frey's son in the band.
Yeah, you got Deacon Frey playing his dad's songs,
yeah,
and singing his work. So, yeah, there's just so much within it. In fact, actually, there's going to be a day on one of my blogs, MickKaler.com, I might add. I've actually linked up some actors who would be perfect to play the members of the Eagles.
There you go.
Get this one.
All right.
I want to see Owen Wilson play Joe Walsh.
Oh, how funny. Perfect. No kidding. Yeah. Wow. Curtis, our producer here, he had a couple of ideas. Who would you like to see a rock biopic made about?
two of them I have. I think the big obvious one that Hollywood would probably jump on would be the Beatles.
Yeah, obviously.
Sure.
I think that'd be the biggest one. Although, being a millennial, I think, at least for my generation, I think Nirvana would be an interesting buy.
Well, there's another great one.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah.
Much like Boy George, even though in a different situation, look at the mental state of Kurt Cobain even before he became famous.
Yeah, and especially with Dave Grohl, now with Foo Fighters, he would have a big influence as to how that whole thing transpired. Also, too, with just this day and age of mental health being a very important topical issue amongst everybody across the country and really globally, I think that'd be a really interesting movie to go.
Yeah, and especially, I mean, once again, as we said, some of these stories end with a redemptive ending and then mm-hmm. some don't. And mm-hmm. so obviously Kurt Cobain's suicide at age 27 certainly would end that film on a sad note. But once again, we can't shy away from that. Don't forget, we have had, Bohemian Rhapsody is not the first rock and roll film made. You may remember back in the I think it was the early 90s, or was it late 80s, that Val Kilmer played Jim Morrison in the Doors film.
Jim Morrison in the Doors, yeah, sure.
That Oliver Stone directed. And then most recently we had Jamie Foxx playing Ray Charles, of which he won the Oscar for. We had Joaquin Phoenix and Reese Witherspoon. And she won the Oscar in the Walk the Line film about Johnny Cash.
Yeah.
So, and there's been a Jimi Hendrix film. Now, the one film that would be interesting to see if this one ever gets off the ground, because this one has been knocking around Hollywood, and this is no exaggeration, for probably almost 30 years, is a story about Janis Joplin.
That's right. And they've tried to do casting.
Yeah.
And say, this one's underway, and then it's not going to work. There's been a lot for that one. You're right.
And I think that now, given the movement now and the whole the female empowerment, that's running through our culture here, Janis Joplin was a hard-drinking, hard-living woman in a man's world and in a man's business. And she certainly made her mark. So she certainly could be viewed as a very strong female feminist role model. And so it might seem that right now, finally, given the popularity of the rock and roll biopic and the fact that Janis Joplin was a very strong woman, it would seem that that might be the perfect time. Here's one. I'm going to throw this one by you and see what you think about this one. Simon and Garfunkel.
Ooh, again, when we're talking about the internal strife.
Yeah, wouldn't that be cool?
Two guys who, literally would not talk to each other and then go on stage and then perform. And again, all the things they've been through between Paul Simon's marriages and issues and Art Garfunkel going into
and the fact
acting.
That they don't, that they were childhood.
Art Garfunkel would be another one that people would want to know more about.
Yeah, I mean, they were childhood friends. They rocketed to stardom early in their career, and now they haven't, they continue, their friendship continually goes through valleys and peaks. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they're talking, sometimes they hate one another. So that really would have drama. Now here's, you talk about another one with built-in drama. This script is written. You couldn't even make this up if you tried. Fleetwood Mac.
There again, with these dynamic personalities, and everyone's like, well, I'm a Stevie Nicks person, or I'm a Lindsey Buckingham person. Just the making of the Rumors album
right.
is enough of a movie right there.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, I mean, that's a soap opera that would rival Luke and Laura from General Hospital.
Yeah, there could be a whole series, there could be a mini-series just on Fleetwood Mac, for sure.
I mean, if people don't know, Rumors came out in 1977. It wound up to this date, has sold 45 million albums. It was number one album for 31 weeks in 1977. And the story surrounding the making of this album was Christine McVie and John McVie, the Mac of Fleetwood Mac, were divorced when they started to make the album. Lindsey Buckingham and Stevie Nicks, who were boyfriend and girlfriend, who came into the band together as a couple, were breaking up. And Mick Fleetwood's wife was having an affair with his best friend. And then later, Mick Fleetwood had an affair with Stevie Nicks.
Yeah, you need a Venn diagram to put all this stuff together.
I mean, yeah, those relationships are like, the family tree is like a gnarled trunk.
Right. And then you've you've got Stevie Nicks with the major weight problems, voice problems, and what else? Drug problems.
Right. I mean, it's, you know, so that, the story, like I said, the making of Rumors itself, the fact that within this kind of bitter, toxic, dark period, they wound up making the best album of their career and one of the best rock albums of all time.
Yeah, and it's funny because, Jim, you and I have talked about this before, where I'm always saying, and you and I both talked about this, about, you know, you got all this success, why can't you guys get along and just get over it?
It's unbelievable. Well, here's another one, Mick. I'll throw this one at you. Marvin Gaye.
You know, I've been wondering about that one for years, especially after the Ray Charles story came out. Because here's this amazing voice, again, troubled guy. Look at how it ends with his dad shooting him and killing him.
His father shoots him. I mean, you can't write that.
Yeah. And like you said, all of these stories, all you got to do is just look at, like, the Wikipedia on all the things that went on and just fill in a few pieces of color, and you've got another story.
And I think another one, especially, once again, given the female empowerment movement that's so strong right now, I think a Madonna film would be a natural.
Yeah, and again, there's someone who's been through so many personas. Have you seen her new look, by the way?
Yeah.
She's got an eye patch on with an X because she's now the Madam X.
Yeah, she's Madam X, yeah.
Okay, if she wants to do this pirate look, she needs a puffy shirt.
And a pirate. And a parrot. She's a parrot on her shoulder.
There you go.
Well, I think she's trying to get the job away from Johnny Depp.
Yeah, exactly. I had one other choice as far as options. Again, internal strife, drug issues, hearing issues, and that'd be The Who.
They're on my list, too. No question.
For years they've been trying to make this Keith Moon movie, and I know that Roger Daltrey, lead singer of The Who, has been involved in trying to produce this thing, and he has admitted they're trying to find a guy who can play Keith Moon.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, no kidding.
A dynamic personality. I remember for years Mike Myers from Wayne's World and all that was tied into trying to make that happen with them, and it didn't come together. Just the Keith Moon story in itself is interesting, let alone Townsend and Daltrey and Entwistle.
And plus, Keith Moon died in, 1978 or 79?
Yeah, 78.
He was only 32 years old, and really, I think to a majority of especially younger people, they don't even really know who Keith Moon is, so it actually would be educational.
Yeah, illuminating as far as his story.
Yeah, because it would really, sort of expose him to a whole new audience. I'm looking at my my texts here, and 847 mentions Aerosmith, perfect example as well. Once again, a group that got together, broke up, drugs, and they got a comeback thanks to rap music, of all things, with Run DMC, right. Did Walk This Way back in the late 80s, and they've gone through their trials and tribulations. Let's see, another, what is this one? 262? Yeah, 262. I can't, my eyes are getting bad. But perfect one. I can't believe we didn't mention this one. David Bowie. How could we have not mentioned David Bowie?
And again, here's a great one because he's passed. And remember, there was that resurgence of Bowie interest as soon as he passed away, like there often is. And it's like, wow, look at all those looks. Look at all the different types of music he did, his work in Germany, his popularity in the early 80s when everybody got into Let's Dance. There's another great example of somebody with a complex character within himself that would really be interesting to watch.
And I like this suggestion. A couple people actually had this one. 816 says this, though. Frank Zappa.
Oh, yeah.
That's a really good one.
That could really be out there. It'd be interesting to find out who they could cast to play him.
Yeah, no kidding. But, there's, like I said, the rock world is so ripe for this because so many of the stories have so much drama and so many things that you couldn't even, if these were fictional, you would say, well, the writer just went off his rocker.
It went crazy.
This is great. Now, one story that I would like, I think, does need to be told, whether it's in a film or I would think, and I've said this many times, as a musical on Broadway, is the Jim Croce story.
That'd be another good one. And that could be a movie, though, too, because look how it ends.
I mean, he dies in, I think he was in his early 30s.
He's in an airplane and boom.
Yeah, at the peak of his fame and, Bad, Bad Leroy Brown, I've Got a Name. Let's not also forget, I think you're going to probably see an Aretha Franklin film.
Yeah, for sure.
And I also would, I think another great one would be a Stevie Wonder movie.
Yeah, these are all great ideas. And again, like you said, the bottom line is, you know, people always say, oh, there's no originality out of Hollywood anymore. Everything's a formula. It's like, okay, maybe that's true, but when you take real life stories, like you just said, all the drama and all the twists and turns that happen within these artists' lives, and again, the best part being the music. The music of all these artists, everyone's like, oh, wait a minute, I know that song. I want to know more about that person. Let me go see that movie.
Yeah, there's no question. Like I said, I think you can certainly go to the classic rock world, and you've got a built-in soundtrack of people's lives, as well as, these stories. But like as Curtis mentioned, it's not just relegated to people in their 60s and 70s. There are certainly stories of people of the last 15 or 20 years that had a major impact on the music business, on a huge audience, and once again, either had a dramatic redemption or, sadly, had a dramatic death.
Yeah, you're getting back to that Nirvana idea, which I think is a great one.
Yeah, it really is.
I could just picture the opening scene being the police rushing to his garage in Seattle and answering the call to the fact that he's, you know, found there dead with a shotgun, and then going backwards and telling his story. It's all right there.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Mick. I appreciate you staying up and staying a little longer with us than planned. Hopefully you will get some of your beauty sleep.
I will do that. I'll work on it, buddy.
And we can, as I said, we can see Mick Kaler's work on a regular basis on WGN Morning News on Channel 9. Mick and his partner, Al Flash, write parody songs based on some of the news headlines of the day. You have one coming up?
We actually are in the works with one for that current popular song, Old Town Road.
Oh, very good. All right.
So hopefully we'll get on real soon. We're working on it.
Thank you so much, Mick Kaler. I appreciate it.
You bet, pal.
Okay. Jim Toronto filling in for Matt Bubala this morning. Be here till 5 o'clock. I can't believe it's already 3 o'clock. We only got 2 hours to go. I'm looking at my list here. You know, I'm on my script. I'm on page 74 out of a 300-page script. I've got, you know, almost 250 pages to go. We've got to get moving here, Curtis. Well, let me take a quick break, and then I will talk to Roger before he does the news, and we'll continue as we continue to try to stuff 5 pounds of bologna in a one pound bag here at WGN, 7:20 a.m. Jim Toronto filling in for Matt Bubala. We'll be back after this. No switching.
Odilic.
Odilic. Okay. Odilic. Can I have the definition?
Of or relating to a force or natural power thought by some to reside in certain individuals and things and to underlie hypnotism, magnetism, and some other phenomena.
Kavang Georgian.
It's from a German part plus a Greek part plus an English combining form. Odilic.
Does come the Greek root highly meaning wood or matter?
Yes, it does.
Odilic. Okay. Does come from Greek ik meaning of or related to?
Ik, yes.
Odilic. O-D-Y-L-I-C. Odilic.
It's complete.
You're all champions of the 2019 Scripps National Spelling Bee.
So that is what occurred in Washington, D.C. a couple of weeks ago. The Scripps National Spelling Bee, an annual affair. I believe, if I remember the show correctly, I believe it's like 92. Could you look that up, Curtis? I thought I remember him saying it was 92 years old, which I think is amazing. I don't remember it being around that long, although maybe it's only been in the last 15 or 20 years where it's really had a lot of, media exposure. It's been on some major networks as well as some major cable networks. So, it certainly has raised its profile, but I have to say, gang, let me start out by saying I love the B, as it is referred to by those of us who are fans of the Scripps National Spelling Bee. I consider myself a pretty good speller. I remember in first grade, I think I won a spelling test. The goal was to have the longest word, meaning the most letters, spelled correctly. And my word was Frankenstein. And I remember I spelled it correctly.
They gave you a proper name to spell?
No, we had to come in with a word.
So you just picked whatever.
We had to find our own word.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know if there was...
It didn't matter if it was a proper name.
Yeah, and first, I mean, no, this wasn't Jeopardy, Roger. I mean, now he's giving me... could you give the spelling
what
in the form of a question?
A proper name?
Yeah. But yeah, so I spelled Frankenstein, and I won that. And so I've been writing for most of my life and career.
Mm-hmm.
So I've always had to spell, so I've considered myself a good speller. So I love watching the bee, as we call it.
Mm-hmm.
And it certainly, as I said, grown in popularity and status over the last several years, to the point where, sadly, I believe, it has become a little, I would say, it's lost its innocence. Because if I remember the spelling bee from 20 or 30 years ago, it kind of was like, hey, you seem like a good speller. Why don't you just try out? You know, and there wasn't a lot of... You know, studying, it was kind of like, oh, you know, Tom is a good speller or Mary's a good speller. But now that the thing is on national television for a while, with the finals 1 year, a couple of years, it was on ABC Network. Now, I believe from the way I see the way these things are going, it's become almost a business, a job. These kids are studying 12, 13 hours a day with tutors or with their parents or on their own, whatever it is, and they're literally reading the entire dictionary. And to me, that I mean, don't get me wrong, that's great determination and drive and commitment. So I understand that on one hand, to dedicate that much time and effort to win this and to put all that effort into it. But at the same time, I think spelling is kind of a thing that is almost like, well, it's the fun of, can I sound that word out? And can I do that just by hearing it and the rules of spelling that I know? Now, as we heard on that clip that we played, you know, they find out what the origin is and, you know, the different pronunciations and they, to their credit, once again, I'm not taking anything away from these kids. They are certainly proficient at this, and they have made it into a science. But I do believe that it's also a new area for kids to get stressed out and parents to be over pressuring their children to win the B. But I have to say, and that aside, so that I felt, even though I've watched the spelling bee over the last several years, and I do feel that it's become more of a profession than it was a hobby, which I thought was the charm of the spelling bee, that it was kind of a hobby. Oh, well, I can sort of spell. The more popular it's gotten, as I said, it seems to have become more of a business. But that aside, what happened this year at the 2019 Scripps National Spelling Bee, I have to say, turned me off so much that I may never watch it again, just because I was so, I don't even know what the word is. I just angered, it's just pure angered at the decision that was made. Because of the fact, as I said earlier, that now so many of these kids are spelling machines, they're spelling robots, they almost know every word in the dictionary, it is getting difficult to stump these kids. And if you've watched the bee with it at all, you could tell that sometimes there's 15 letter words and sometimes there are 7 letter words, but based upon the different sounds and the spellings, a 5 letter word could be just as hard to spell as a 20 letter word. But these kids are studying so hard and reading that you can see that sometimes they get a word that you say to yourself, what the heck is that? And they are smiling as wide as a Cheshire cat because they know that word. They've studied that word in their intense preparation for this bee. To the point now that before the finals, you know, this would be whittled down, and as they continue, the words would get more difficult, and slowly but surely, 15 people would be whittled down to 10, would be whittled down to 5, would be whittled down to 2, and there would be a winner. Well, because this, it seems that this spelling bee now has become a major goal for both students and parents, and don't discount the pressure of the parents, because they're all sitting in the audience looking at their kids like, you know, if you don't spell this, don't come home tonight. So there's a little of that going on. I don't think Felicity Huffman's kids had to worry about that, or Lori Loughlin's kids.
I don't think they had to worry about spelling bees.
They didn't have to worry about anything. They got into college.
By the way, one of them's graduating.
From where?
I just saw...
Well, check the Photoshop. What school did they put... What cap and gown did they throw the person's head into?
I don't know. But I saw a story.
Really?
It was Thursday or Friday.
Wow.
Who are the two? Felicity
Huffman and Lori Loughlin.
It was Huffman.
Yeah, probably Huffman's. Yeah. Because Lori Loughlin's kid doesn't look like she's graduated from anything except how to put on makeup correctly. But
17. Yeah. Now, have you seen the movie Aquila and the Bee?
Yes. I've heard of it.
It's a great movie.
Yeah, yeah.
And it shows exactly what you're talking about.
Well, here's the thing, though. So what really bugged me about this is I do enjoy this. I watch it live on the finals. I DVR the early rounds. I really enjoy this.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I love how the kids sometimes, if you watch it at all, you see how they sort of spell by writing in their hand. You know, they're mm-hmm. visualizing.
Mm-hmm.
And they're, you know, when there's a word that they are baffled by, you can see their heads, their eyes are spinning. They're going through their... You know, all of the words that they've learned and the rules that they've learned of spelling. So, as I said, because these kids are now almost robot spellers, they are literally human spell checks.
Yeah.
This year, they got down to about 8 spellers, and they couldn't stump these kids.
Yeah.
So, in round 17, Dr. Jacques, who is the guy who... I don't even know what his term. He's got a professional job. I don't know if it's the professional pronouncer or something, but he's the guy every year who gives the kids the words.
Okay.
And he says, okay, we are now in round 17. There's 8 of you left. If we get to round 20, whoever is left in round 20, if you spell your word correctly, you will be a winner. A co-winner, if there's more than one. Mm-hmm. But round 20, we're stopping. Because we don't think that we can stump you. So, as you would expect, these kids are ace spellers now.
Yeah.
All 8 kids in the 20th round get their word correct. So, 8 winners are crowned champion. 8 co-winners. Okay, I've got a huge problem with that.
Everybody's a winner.
I hate that entire philosophy. It cuts to the core of what this country was based on. We were in a competition called the Revolutionary War. That's how we gained our freedom. So competition is in our DNA. And we are completely beginning to blur that so that people's feelings don't get hurt and all this stuff. No. We need competition. It's what keeps our country moving. And to me, if I was a kid who studied for 12 hours for 12 months and they decide to have 8 co-champions because they don't think that they can stump me. When we have a baseball game in the 17th inning, does the umpire come out and say, I don't think, it doesn't seem like you guys are going to score any more runs, so we're just going to have a tie? No, we play the game if it's 15 hours, and if it's 17 innings or 75 innings, we play till there's a winner. It's a competition. It's a spelling bee competition. It's not a fraternity. There should be one winner. And if I was one of those kids who studied for 12 hours for 12 months, I would want to be a winner. And if you say, well, geez, you know, it's been 4 hours and these kids are tired. Well, you know what? If you're in a competition, your stamina is part of your training. It's not just if you know I before E, except after C. It's also, can you handle the pressure? Do you have the stamina? And so if we keep going to round 27 and kids start to shake or they can't take it and they forget how to spell cat, then they lose. Or if you say, Jim, my gosh, that's pretty mean, fine. Then what we say is, you've been spelling for 4 hours. We are going to go to round 20. If we don't have a winner, we will go home and come back tomorrow at 9 o'clock and continue. But we will have a winner. Eight winners is not the way to have a competition. That is not the way you do it. And to sit there and say, well, we don't think we can stump you, that's not your call. You don't know if you can stump me, and you don't know what a tough word is after 5 hours of spelling. That's what competition is. And as I said before, it's not only skill, it's also stamina. And those kids who are in that, and I understand they're 12 and 13 and 14 years old, that's a part of the game, folks. That's a part of life. If this spelling bee is there to talk about commitment and devotion and setting a goal and achieving that goal, then all those things that go into that should also be respected. And I think they made a horrible decision, because now my question is, what happens next year? What if we're in this? Are we ever going to have a single winner again? How do we? This was an arbitrary decision. How are we going to, if we have five people next year in round 20, now is round 20 the cutoff point? I mean, what have you done here? There's no rules. This is Dodge City. Horrible decision. Unfair to the children who studied their brains out to be the winner. And now they got to kiss their sister. No, that's not right. That's not competition. And I look back at next year and say, what are you going to do next year? Because these kids are spelling the hell out of these words. So you better find a lot of tough words, and you better be prepared to go 25 rounds, because this is what you've created now. You purposely you know, brought the spelling bee up to a new level of status and exposure. And so now everybody wants to be the best speller. And that's my point. They want to be the best speller. They don't want to be one of the best spellers. So let's have a real winner. And let's, if we can't do it in one day, we come back the next day. I think all those kids and I think all those families would have found a way to come home or to go back the next day. I think they would have come back. It's like a rain delay. So very, very disappointed in the spelling bee. I don't know if I'm going to be able to watch again. As I said, to the organizers of the National Spelling Bee, T-R-A-V-E-S-T. Travesty. Thank you very much. It's about 3:28. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back. Jim Toronto filling in for Matt Bubala. No switching. Tomorrow is Father's Day. How will Roger Bannish be celebrating Father's Day?
On Sunday?
Yeah, that's sleeping. Tomorrow.
All right.
Wow, you have no idea how time works.
My weekends are up for grabs.
Why is that?
Well, because of my hours.
Yeah, you do have crazy hours.
So Sunday, I have a 12-hour turnaround.
Oof.
I leave here at 5, and I'm back at 5. So we're not doing anything Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Monday evening, we're going out for dinner.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So that'll be nice, because the kids are in their last week of school. They only got like 4 days of school left, so it's a combination. You know,
your kids are in their 30s. What kind of school is that?
Oh, the grandkids.
Oh, you didn't say that. You said your kids.
Well, I say kids. I'm not going to call my two kids kids.
Well, what
they're
are they?
Grown-ups.
But they're your children.
My children. They're not kids.
Ugh. Boy, so many rules.
Got that right.
Well, I'm not a parent, so I don't know about all these different colloquial terms that you have.
Okay, well, I will educate
for your progeny.
I will
P-R-O-G-A-N-Y. Or is it E-N-Y? Ding! progeny, P-R-O-G, is it A-N-Y? Look that up, Curtis. Progeny. I think it's A-N-Y, right?
No, I don't think
it is. Is it E-N-Y?
I believe it is.
E-N-Y?
I think so.
I'm sorry, I don't have a
mic. But I'll be proven wrong if...
What is it?
E-N-Y.
Did I say A-N-Y first?
Yes, you did.
Oh, jeez. There you go. See what happens?
Mm-hmm.
See? Oh, we don't think we can stump you. Yes, you did. I just got stumped. I'm out. Now there's only seven left. You don't know if I can, what I can spell and what I can't spell.
You know what they should have done? Given them, like, real easy words, and when they spelled it, say, you're wrong. Get out of here.
Oh, yeah. Some of those kids would have just crumbled.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, when they lose.
It was almost midnight when the thing
ended. Yeah, it was 4 hours. I understand that.
They were falling asleep already.
All right, well, then we'll call it off. And what happens with a rain delay? We have a suspended game, and we do it tomorrow.
Yeah, you pick it up later.
There's no such thing as eight winners. But anyway, we'll have yourself a merry little Father's Day.
Thank you very much.
Now, I have a question for you. Mm-hmm. At this stage, are you more... excited to get a Father's Day, you know, gift or something from your grandkids or from your kids who you apparently don't really like anymore because you don't even, you know, talk about them. You just say the kids. And you mean their grandkids. Wow. You've just completely skipped an entire generation of the Baddish family. I don't understand that.
I love getting stuff from our grandgirls. And I love getting stuff from our regular children.
Our regular children.
As opposed to the ones that we keep in the closet.
Yeah, are you hearing yourself?
Yes. Hey, it's
I know it's quarter to four, Roger, but my gosh.
Quarter to four, there's nobody left. Quarter to three, never mind.
Yeah.
But
so even at this,
I don't expect anything.
Uh huh.
Seriously, I never have. Growing up, never expected anything. It's no big deal.
Yeah.
But I love getting stuff from the grandkids.
Yeah.
Our kids, you know, they don't need to buy us anything. They both are working. Right. They both need to save their money for things they need to do. Mm-hmm. And I don't need any. I've got everything I need. I have my health. I have my family. I work in the one and only job that I, A, have the ability to do, and B, love doing. And I'm now retired, well, or semi-retired.
Right.
So
life is good.
I feel blessed. I don't go around saying it all the time. I'm not like, honey, did you know I'm blessed? No, I don't do that. I'm enjoying life right now I want to live it.
Well, very good.
And I'm happy I'm able to do it.
Yeah.
If I wasn't able to do it, my life would then be what it would be at that point. And I would continue to live it at that point. So,
well, very good. Well, there's not too many people that can say that, so you should consider yourself both lucky as well as a success, and happy Father's Day.
Well, thank you, sir, very much.
See, I like Roger, folks. We
get along. Gracious,
we kid. Oh, I mock because I love.
I know,
you know that.
I know,
but so I wanted to say I lost my parents in 2005 and 2006, and since they passed away, I do visit their grave once a month, whether there's a specific reason, their birthday or an anniversary or a holiday. And, you know, I don't make a big deal about it, but I do make sure that once a month I thankfully, the cemetery is only about 20 minutes or so from my home.
Well, that's
so
nice.
Yeah, so it's not very far.
Mm-hmm.
And I make a point if I'm driving in that area, or if not, I'm like, okay, I've got to go visit them. And, you know, I'm not in the viewpoint that they're seeing me do this. I just feel that...
It makes you feel
good. It makes me feel good, and mm-hmm. I also feel that I'm just respecting them and trying as much as I can mm-hmm. to keep their memory as present in my life as it can be, because, you know, it's been almost 15 years, and I know that if you don't really make an effort sometime
mm-hmm.
to remember people that have passed away, it is easy for them to just fade away.
Right.
And so I mean, I have pictures of them around the house, but I, to me, it's and I don't stay there long. I'm not sitting there for hours. Mm-hmm. It's an outdoor mausoleum. I don't sit there for hours. I'm not talking to them. It's not one of those things. But I just feel that it's something that I want to do for them.
You're there. You're in the spirit
yeah.
of it.
And sure. What I usually do, I will always, even though you're not supposed to at this cemetery, but mm-hmm. I do bring a flower and I tape it there. Or if it's a holiday, a birthday.
Well, you said at the mausoleum, don't they have like little... little flower holders.
Yeah, some are, no, this one. Yeah, no, some do. This one doesn't. It's just an outdoor thing.
I got you.
So I'll tape, you know, and I'll put a card on there mm-hmm. if it's a birthday card. So I go to the store and I buy, mm-hmm. I bought my dad a Father's Day card for tomorrow.
Very nice.
And I will tape it on there, and then mm-hmm. After a couple of days, I'm sure they come and rip it off. You know,
yeah.
because they don't want things to be desecrating it, whatever. But for me, that day, I put it on there mm-hmm. and whatever.
That's nice.
So here's the thing.
Yeah.
I figured that I'm doing this, and it's a very personal thing. As I said, I don't make a big deal about it. I'm not mm-hmm. making a grand, to my wife, I'm going to the cemetery now,
mm-hmm.
you know. So about a month and a half ago, I go. Maybe it was around Easter time. And they're right next, or a few... crypts away from where my parents are, there's mm-hmm. another family of four people, and they are in front of their family member, and they're kind of standing there. And so I'm like, oh, geez, you know, now I'm kind of embarrassed, because you're not supposed to tape anything on these.
I see. So now someone's there to see.
Yeah, so now, because usually when I go, I'll go like on off hours, there's mm-hmm. nobody there, and I just go there. I have the tape already on the thing. I just go there, stick it on mm-hmm. there, mm-hmm. pay my respects, and leave. But now there's somebody standing there, and I'm like, oh, geez, now what am I going to do, you know? So,
because you don't know how long they're going to be
there. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So, but finally, I'm like, well, I can't wait. You know, who mm-hmm. knows? They might be there for 10 hours. So I just go up to my parents' crypt. And what's nice, too, about 2 or 3 years ago, they allowed you go through them, and they put it on there for you in a frame. But you can have a picture of them.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so I have my parents, a picture of my parents on their crypt.
Okay.
That is, so it's all uniform.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the cemetery does it. You give them a photo, and they do it so it's, you know, it won't get hurt by the elements, and it's mm-hmm. all in the same frame on all the different crypts, so blah, blah, blah. So anyway, I'm like, I have to do this. So I just go up there, and I tape it on there, and I'm standing in front of it for a couple of seconds. And so there was a man, a husband and a wife, it looked like a grandmother and maybe a little kid. The grandmother was holding the little kid. And so I put it on there, and they kind of smiled and nodded.
Mm-hmm.
And I nodded, and I said, happy Easter.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy said to me, he looked at me, and he looked at my mom and dad's crypt, and he said, I have to tell you, I really enjoy the cards that you put on your parents' crypt.
Oh my goodness.
Because I will not only put a card on it, I will, you know, underline certain phrases,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I'll put Love Jim on there,
right.
you know, miss you, that whole thing. And so he said, I really love the cards and the sentiments that you put on your parents' crypt.
Yeah.
And I was so touched
mm-hmm.
and so taken, because I never thought in a million years
right.
that anyone was, A, paying attention to these, B, why would they?
Mm-hmm.
It's not their family.
Right.
That anybody would have noticed it enough on something of a regular basis. This person must also visit his family member on a regular basis to have seen a series of cards that I've put on for him to say, because he said cards, plural.
Right.
And so I was just so taken, and I said, well, thank you so much. I said, it's the least I can do.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, no, I just really think they're so nice.
Well, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
So you say that the cemetery,
mm-hmm.
the owners, are kind of persnickety about extraneous stuff
right.
in there. That everything's uniform. They take care of everything.
Right.
Have you ever noticed when you go to visit, I'm sure you look around.
Yeah.
Have you ever noticed any other
yes.
that have stuff?
Yes, I do.
There
and
are.
Yes,
okay.
I do notice it, and
okay.
I always wonder, well, why did you pull mine off?
Right.
Because I'll look, at another section,
mm-hmm.
same area, different wall,
mm-hmm.
and, there's all this stuff. Some stuff to the point that it's actually gaudy.
Does it look like it hasn't been taken down
yeah,
in a while?
Yeah,
okay.
I mean, yeah.
Right,
like,
right,
sometimes
right.
there's, like, stickers.
Okay, all right.
I mean, stickers.
Yeah.
I don't know if a little kid did that, but still, mm-hmm. I mean, I'll put a single flower,
right.
And tape it there, a rose mm-hmm. or some kind of a Gerber daisy or something like mm-hmm. that. Or, like I said, for an occasion, like tomorrow, or I will go there and I will put the card up there.
Right.
Now, what's funny is in the winter, they clearly don't clean. They don't take as much care.
Oh.
So the wind, like sometimes I'll go there because on Christmas.
Uh-huh.
And then my dad's birthday is in February and I'll go back there and his card will still be up there.
Oh.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
it'll be weather beaten.
Oh,
you know
gosh.
What I mean?
Well,
so
that's why I was asking.
Yeah.
Because if they were adamant about keeping everything clean, but yet yours was pretty much the only one, if that's what I was saying, thinking that he's noticing this because yours is the only one that has
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
But
well,
you're saying other
yeah, no,
cards
I don't
have
know if they
stuff.
Ever yeah, they have stuff up there. I don't know if they have cards. And once again, he may see the cards that I put on because literally his relative is two or three crypts away.
I got you.
So
within his
yeah,
eye,
within his eye
yeah,
view, and
yeah.
as I said, I don't know how long sometimes they stay up,
okay.
but I usually go early in the morning of the holiday.
I got you.
So he may come later in the afternoon and mm-hmm. he sees it there.
Yeah.
Maybe by in a couple of days it's gone.
Yeah.
But I was just so shocked that anybody would A, be noticing that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not doing it as a grand gesture to show
and
off.
I don't think it's taken as
no.
that.
But I just was very, as I said, touched that somebody would have noticed it, would mm-hmm. have been moved by it, and to his credit, he could have just smiled and kept his mouth shut.
Right.
But he actually went to the next step to, tell me that.
Well, he's of a like mind.
Yeah.
He appreciates the gesture, and I'm sure he does. Maybe something
right.
along those lines in his own way
right.
as a similar type gesture
yeah.
for his family members who are there. So, he's got three, from the way you described it, three generations of the family
right.
come to visit.
Exactly.
So,
But I was just really, I was like, wow.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, I drove home that day saying, okay, well, as I said, I'm not doing this for that, but
right.
I'm like, in a little way, I said to myself, well, Mom and Dad, I helped someone else take a look at your crypt too.
You
so, spreading the word there.
Mm-hmm. Very cool.
And as I said, I really enjoy doing that. As I said, I'm not. It's not one of these things that I'm sitting there and, either bawling my eyes out or
mm-hmm.
Talking to them. It's not that. It's just a very small. In my mind, it's there and back. It's 45 minutes. And in my view, I think I owe it to my parents.
Time well spent.
If I can't give them 45 minutes a month,
mm-hmm.
then shame on me.
I understand. Sure.
After 40 some years that they gave me,
mm-hmm.
and I do miss them dearly. So, to my dad, let me just send this out into the cosmos. Miss you so much, Chief, and I'll be there tomorrow to see you
Sounds
with
good.
Your card.
Awesome.
So, and happy Father's Day to you, too, there, Roger.
Thank you very much.
I mean that
appreciate
sincerely.
It.
Jim Tirano filling in for Matt Bubala here at WGN, 720 AM. It's about 3:56. We'll take a quick break. Be right back with this. No switching.
Drowning in the pouring rain. Hitch it a ride. Hitch it a ride. Gotta get me home to my baby's side.
Jim Tirano here at WGN 720 AM in Chicago, filling in for Matt Bubala this morning. We'll be here till 5 AM. Will you be hitching a ride? Not with your thumb, but with your smartphone on a scooter, an electric scooter. Starting today, June 15th, and running for a few months till October 15th, a new pilot program in the parts of the city will begin today with these new electric scooters. They are battery operated. They cost $1 to rent, and then I believe they are 15 cents per minute. And you can drive them wherever you want. And then you get to your destination, and if you're done, you simply turn it off and leave it where you are, and you're off you go. I've seen these in action. In theory, it sounds like a really fun and affordable and convenient way to scoot around if you're not going very far in an urban setting. You don't feel like walking. Maybe you've walked already 2 miles and you're going somewhere and geez, I'm not going to take a bus or something. And here's this scooter. It certainly, you know, it probably, you know, is something that the Segway wanted to be and certainly never became. I'll never forget in the mid-90s when the Segway was being announced, it was being touted as the greatest, newest, and game-changing urban transportation product of our lifetime. I'm not exaggerating. You can go back probably online and find stories written at what before the Segway was actually introduced, but when it was this concept or that it was being developed, there was so much hype and so much talk about how urban transportation would be forever changed. And people were running to invest in this because it was literally going to change the world. Well, as many things happen, especially in the technology world, the Segway is a good idea if you live in a temperate climate like California, like Silicon Valley, where most of these people come up with these cool technology ideas. But here in Chicago, for instance, or any kind of Midwestern place where we have rain and certainly the winter, we have, I mean, let's face it, we pretty much have 7 months of winter here. Or cold weather. And we have certainly 3 to 4 months, if not more sometimes, of snow. So that Segway, really not made for our climate. So to become some cultural game changer, just out of the box, it wasn't viable. Because the Segway is a good idea if you're in nice weather. But I don't think you're going to be driving a Segway through snow, especially some sidewalks that aren't shoveled during the summer or during the winter. So how is this going to work? So anyway, about a year ago, I was in Santa Monica, and we were staying near the beach there, right by the Santa Monica Pier. Gorgeous Santa Monica, beautiful, beautiful area of California and of this country. And so we're walking along by the beach, and there's the beach, obviously, where the shore is, where the water. But then there's a sidewalk where people are walking and biking and skateboarding and rollerblading. And, much to my curiosity, scootering, if that's a word. S-C-O-O-T-E-R-I-N-G. And I'm like, what the heck is this thing? And I'm not sure what it is and how it's working. But I'm seeing people zipping by on these things, and they're laying down on the ground as they're just sitting there. So I thought that maybe they were some kind of, because, you know, I thought there was some kind of maybe policing thing, because that's what you see a lot of times now with, you see police on Segways. So I thought, well, what are these things? So I see a guy, and he's got his cell phone, and he's, you know, using the barcode, and he's putting it down on this little pad on the scooter. And so I walked up to him, and I said, I'm sorry. I said, I'm from Chicago. We don't have these. What are you doing? And he looks at me, and he's like, what am I doing? He thought I was from another country, you know, another world. He said, well, I'm renting a scooter. I said, so you're renting this? I mean, I had no idea how this was working. So that's what you do. You find a scooter. There will either be areas where they are, or, as I said, you may see these just like you see bikes tied up on a tree or on a wherever.
Like the Divvy bikes.
Exactly. And so it's basically the Divvy bike concept, like Curtis is mentioning. But it's different in that, you know, these things are battery powered. They go 50 miles an hour. And they can be dangerous. They sound fun. They look fun. But people, I mean, what's scary, and I hate to sound like I'm 100 years old, but, you know, at least when I saw these in California, people were driving in the street next to cars with no helmets, shorts. I mean, this is worse to me than a motorcycle with, talk about no protection. And the fact that you're going 15, you know, at least a motorcycle keeps up with traffic. This thing is puttering along at 15 miles an hour, but the people driving them act like they own the road. So I think there's a lot of potential for car accidents. Now, if you're on the sidewalk, you know, how wide is a sidewalk? And now I've got this thing going, you know, it's different than a bicycle in that it's 15 miles an hour. And how proficient are people going to be, initially especially, at steering and driving these things? Not only are pedestrians or cars potentially in trouble to get hit, but I'm also worried, let's face it, folks, you know, everybody pretends like they're all coordinated until you see them in action. A lot of people are not coordinated, and everybody wants to be trendy. I'll never forget when the inline roller skates started, and everybody, you saw all these people, and they bought their $300 skates, and they had all their knee pads and their helmets. They should have bought armor for their bodies because they were taking spills, and I remember stories about how emergency rooms and hospitals were getting inundated with people that were breaking legs, spraining ankles, breaking arms because they were watching these cool people in California, you know, crisscrossing their legs and disco dancing with their inline skates. And these people never skated in their lives and they were killing themselves. And so I think, sadly, at the beginning, you know, whether you're coordinated or not, it's a moving vehicle that needs to be driven correctly. And I'm not sure how much practice or how much instruction one gets on this, if anything. Now, it can't be the hardest thing in the world, but all I'm saying is, if you're not overly familiar with how to use it, then it doesn't matter how easy it is. It's not easy for you. So, as I said, it starts today. It's a pilot program. I guess there's going to be about 2,500 of these electric scooters throughout the city. It's about a 50-mile test zone. And it's going to be in various neighborhoods around the city, on the west side and the northwest side and the southwest side. Let's see. The 50 mile square zone is going to be bounded by Halsted and the Chicago River on the east, Irving Park Road on the north and the city boundary on the north by the city boundary and Harlem Avenue on the west. And then we're on the south side here. In the river on the south. I don't know if that helps you or not, but needless to say, there's about four or five neighborhoods. Wicker Park, the Austin neighborhood, places like that will have them. So you will see these things starting tomorrow. You take your smartphone. I think that's the only way. So I'm already out of the game because I have a flip phone. I don't think my flip phone is going to be able to charge both physically as well as monetarily the scooter. So I'm already out of the game. So maybe that's good. I don't know. But what I was saying is we were walking on the sidewalk that is parallel to the ocean on Santa Monica, and three times during our stay, these people that clearly drive these things all the time and feel very confident zipped past me. I mean, literally, I felt the air of them zipping past me on my arm, if not a piece of their clothing. That's how close they were to me. And I couldn't see them because they came from behind. But I know that they must have made that turn around me at the last second. So who knows? If someone doesn't know how to use this, they could crash right into you from behind. And even in this case, say this person was proficient as they went past me several times. They knew exactly how to ride this scooter, and they perfectly cut that line right to the exact mark and got around me with no problem. Except, what if I moved my arm out for some reason? What if I sneezed? What if I scratched my head? What if I put my elbow out? What if I went in my pocket for something? When that guy zipped past me, right past my thigh and my arm, if I had stuck my arm out, he goes flying and I go flying. So these are going to, there is a danger to these until people know how to use them. And there's also the clutter factor. I know around that area where a lot of people were using these scooters because they were just driving up along the beach area. These scooters were laying around everywhere. It looked terrible. And so it's like you can almost trip over them. So there's a lot of things that go into this entire concept of these urban scooters here. They look fun. I'm sure they're convenient. But I'm taking a step back on these because I've seen them in action. And I think there's a lot of pitfalls along with the potential upside to them. Let me go to the phone here. Could you put him on there, Curtis? Is he on? Are you there, Robert?
Yeah, great show, mate.
Oh,
always.
Thank you.
Always good to hear your voice.
Thank you.
Here's a couple goofy facts. One of my bicycles, I put one of those two-cycle engines on it.
Oh, really?
Okay? Yeah, you can put an engine on your bicycle.
Wow.
It goes about 25 miles an hour. That you need a license for.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And you can't go in the bike lane, but if you have an electrical bicycle, and I have one of those too, you don't need a driver's license.
Hmm.
Okay. Number two is I ride probably 100 miles a week, maybe a mile in my car and the rest on my bikes. Nobody pays attention to the law.
Right. Exactly.
I shouldn't say nobody. 80% of the people that ride bicycles don't care. There's a stop sign, blow it. Stop light, you blow it. You know,
and
in the city, it's congested. Now these scooters are supposed to go in the bike lane. How crazy is that?
Yeah, no, and you know that they're not going to stay in the bike lane.
No. These people, when there's a stoplight, they'll blow through.
Yeah.
No, I didn't see the truck.
Yeah, no, I forgot even about the. Yeah, I mean that whole mindset And I know there's a lot of people that drive bicycles out here, and they complain, oh, you know, we have as much right to the road as you do, and I understand that. But you have to remember, if you're a bicycler or now a scooter rider, I've got a car that weighs 3,000 pounds.
No, I'm Superman.
And, you know, and so I don't care, you know, I know we all have a right to the road, but you have to understand that my car still rules that road, and if we hit, I'm going to be okay, and you're going to go flying. And so that's a really good point. And not only to your point about the ability to drive these things, but then we're going to have to worry about the manner in which these people ride these things. Are they going to obey the rules of the road? You know, that's a really good point. I'm glad you brought that up. So as I said...
One more point.
Yeah, real quick, because I got to go to news.
Okay, insurance.
Right. Oh, yeah. Very good.
What about that?
Yeah, that's another good point. As I said... This stuff, you know, thank you so much, Roger. I got to run. There's so many, you know, there's so many cool ideas. This sounds like a cool idea, but Robert brings up some really good points about the way people may drive these things in terms of the rules of the road. Insurance. What if they hit your car? What if they hit you? What's the insurance, liability on that? I don't know. It's going to be interesting, but we'll see them starting today, Saturday, in many neighborhoods around the city. Chicago, scooter madness. We'll see what happens. Jim Toronto filling in for Matt Bubawa this morning. Take a quick break. Be back after this. No switching.
Put your head on my shoulder. Hold me in your arms.
Jim Toronto here at WGN, 7:20 a.m. Filling in for Matt Bubawa this morning. We've got another 22 minutes or so, and then we hand things off to Orion Samuelson. I'm playing the classic Paul Anka song, Put Your Head on My Shoulder, for a reason. So last week, I went to Amsterdam to see Elton John perform, my 193rd show. And because I used my miles for this, you know, so I saved money on the airfare. You know, they don't always have the most direct flights when you use your miles. They make it sound like it's such a great deal, but a lot of times there's very few direct flights on that. So my flight, here's Chicago, right? Major hub, major, you know, there's the word international is in the title of O'Hare, right?
Yeah.
O'Hare International Airport.
Right.
Except when you want to fly internationally. So get this. It could have been worse, but my flight to Amsterdam was not ordered to AMS directly. It was ordered to DFW.
Dallas-Fort Worth.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, so first of all, that makes me angry, because for the first 2.5 hours of my trip, I'm basically just going down.
Well, you're not getting any closer.
No, I'm not getting any closer at all.
Yeah.
I'm just going down. I'm not going east at all.
Right.
South. I have to go east.
Right.
And for the first 2 hours of my odyssey, I'm going down.
Mm-hmm.
So a total waste of time, first of all. So now I'm in Dallas, and now I'm going to get my flight at 3 o'clock, and I'm going to go directly now to Amsterdam.
Wow, so Dallas-Fort Worth has an international flight, but Chicago doesn't.
Well, I'm sure they do, except I'm trying to use my miles, and so that's not available.
I gotcha.
With your miles.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So, or it would cost 50,000 more miles if you want the direct flight.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I waste 2.5 hours of my journey just going south for no reason.
Dallas-Fort Worth, nice airport.
Yeah, that's fine, except, you know, I'm going to Amsterdam.
I know.
I'm not going to Dallas-Fort Worth.
A little sightseeing.
I don't need to see where the Cowboys practice. I've already been to Dealey Plaza. It's amazing. Okay. It's unbelievable. I can't believe how small it is. I get it.
Okay.
So I get on the plane, and I booked a window seat.
Okay.
Because I'm usually an aisle guy. But on a long flight, I did not want to sit on the aisle because I'm assuming that people are going to have to get up and go to the bathroom.
Okay.
And I don't want
to. You want to be the one to get up and go to the bathroom?
Well, I don't. I have an amazing bladder.
Oh, really? Yeah. That's for another story. Let's get to Amsterdam.
Amazing bladder. Okay. I did not go on the plane.
Wow.
10 hours. Yeah. Amazing bladder. Amazing bladder. So I'm on my window seat, mm-hmm. and there's a gentleman, older gentleman, on the aisle.
Okay.
And then a young man comes in and sits in the middle, and I'm assuming he's in his mid to early 20s. Might be a little older, but he looked very young.
Okay.
And so he's on his phone, of course, you know, texting.
Mm-hmm.
And every so often, he's kind of turning and looking at me. And I don't know what that's about. I don't think he recognizes me as Elton Jim.
Right.
Because we're in Dallas. I mean, in Chicago, certainly he would.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Everybody walks by you.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, Jim.
Hey, wow. So yeah. So now we're ready to take off, and he looks at me, and first he starts with the usual, "Excuse me, sir." Sir.
Because you're old.
Yeah, because I'm old.
Yeah.
"Excuse me, sir, but I'm wondering, I'm with a big group, and they're sitting over there,
yeah.
and I'm wondering if you wouldn't mind switching seats with that girl over there."
Oh, I don't think so.
And I said, "Well, where is she sitting?" And he points to the five seats, or the four seats in the middle.
No.
And she's in the middle of the middle.
No.
No, I'm not doing that. No. Sorry.
Ain't going to happen, kid.
Yeah, so I said, "Geez," I said, "I'm sorry, but I really can't do that." He goes, "Oh, okay, that's fine." And then I'm sure he texted something like, "This jerk next to me won't move." But I don't care. I'm not sitting in the middle for 10 hours.
Yeah, with the other large group.
Yeah. So, right, amongst all them.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I need.
Yeah.
Well, then the best part is, before we take, he wants to move so he could talk to some person that he knows,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
In my seat, in my window seat.
Right.
This was 5 minutes after he asked me this ridiculous request, and about 6 minutes before we take off, he is out to the world, totally sleeping. And this guy slept for 8 of the 9.5 hours, and I'm not exaggerating. We actually had to divert to New York because our navigation system broke.
Oops.
And we had to sit there for 2 hours. He didn't wake up during the diversion. While we sat for 2 hours.
What did he take?
I don't know. He was out like a lamp. But here's the thing. I never saw a more restless sleeper in my life.
Dog must have been chasing him.
This guy is tossing and turning in his sleep. Once again, he's not awake for this.
Are you sure he was sleeping?
I swear to God. He lifted, you know, like your armrest between me and him?
Yeah.
He lifted it up back and forth in his sleep.
Oh, he was trying to upset you so you would move.
Then.
This is the trick.
Here's the best part.
Okay.
He snuggles up to me. I'm not lying. I never got this much in a movie when I was 16 years old at the Norwich Theater. I never got this much off of anyone.
Whoa.
This guy has his head not just on my shoulder, but on my shoulder and half of my chest.
Yeah, he wanted you to move.
I mean, and he snuggled in. He like nestled.
What did he do to the guy next to
him? Well, here's the best part. So the guy at the end, he sees this.
Yeah.
He's laughing. He's laughing at me. And I've got this face like, I'm going to kill someone.
Yeah.
And so then, I mean, so now I'm sitting there for like a minute and a half. And then finally I move him. And then he quickly, you know, lifts his head. And now he's asleep with his head back.
Uh-huh.
And then 10 minutes later.
He's loving you.
He's nestling again. He's nestling. What's the word? Nestling?
Yeah.
He's nestling up to me. And this guy's laughing at me again. And I'm sitting there going, you know, first of all, I've got somebody falling in love with me.
Yeah.
And then I got someone laughing at our love affair. So he does this, I'm not joking now, he does this at least four times within the span of an hour. So
he was wide awake, and he, seriously, the girl had texted him back, fake like you're asleep and fall all over this guy.
And this guy, and he was sleeping for 8 hours. Now
he was faking.
Well, the best part is then, and he's grabbing his pillow and he's putting it behind his head, and then he's leaning forward, his head on the seat in front of him, and then he's back with the armrest back and forth, which I didn't understand what that was, although he's hitting my thigh when he's doing it. And then, once again, back to nestling, and he's found, and now he's certainly found this very comfy spot between my shoulder blade and my chest.
Oh, good Lord.
And I'm like, stop falling in love with me, young man, because this can't last. Our flight's going to end soon. So let me take a break and tell you what happened to the guy at the end of the row. Jim Toronto filling in for Matt Babawa this morning. We'll be here until about 5, and then we will have the news with Roger, and then he will hand it off to Orion Samuelson. We'll have a chance to chat with Orion in a couple minutes, too, so I'm looking forward to that. Let me finish my story real quick here. So I am on a plane on my way to Amsterdam. This guy next to me, over the course of this flight, it's a 9.5-hour flight from Dallas to Amsterdam. I'm not joking, because then I started counting it. 13 times he grabbed and nestled into my shoulder, and I was there for like a minute and a half or 2 minutes till finally, because I figured maybe he will move on his own. I didn't want to keep nudging him, and then when I nudged him, then he would violently move and rustle around and then find a new spot. And I believe he was sleeping. I just think he was the most restless sleeper I ever saw. But as I said, I'm on the window, he's in the middle, and then there's another older gentleman in the aisle. And this older guy is getting a kick out of seeing him laying on my shoulder, because it had to look hilarious. If I was able to take a picture with my cell phone, which I could have done actually, but I couldn't, because I would have woke him up. If I went to get my phone in my bag, I didn't want to wake him up, right? God forbid. I mean, in the midst of him falling in love with me and sitting on my shoulder, and then I'm worried about me waking him up. And that's why I didn't want to nudge him, because I was trying to be nice, but at the same time, I mean, you're on my shoulder. So at one point, I then finally, after a couple minutes, I would nudge him away, and he would move, and then he would be in the middle on his chair, on his seat, fine. Well, something happened about an hour out of Ireland. Suddenly, and I know this because I had my little map up on my screen, he started laying on the other guy's shoulder. The guy that was laughing at me. The old guy. Suddenly, we broke up, apparently. I did something. I broke his heart. So suddenly he wasn't sleeping on my shoulder anymore, and he was doing these violent, restless moves, and then suddenly his head wound up on that guy's shoulder. And I just gave that guy a look with a smile, and it was kind of early, because it was a late flight. So I didn't want to say anything, but I just felt like saying, he's all yours. You were laughing at me. Now I want to see how you deal with this. And then, with about an hour and a half to go to the flight, he woke up, he was refreshed. I don't think he knew what he was doing, because he never said, geez, I'm sorry. I think this guy was just a deep sleeper, totally restless. I know Roger said he thinks that he was doing this on purpose, but I really believe, because when he would move away from me, I'd look at him, and he wasn't blinking. And he was just out. I never saw somebody fall asleep so fast and so deep for 8 hours. But I was sitting there going with this, when his head is on my shoulder, I'm like, what am I supposed to do here? I mean, it was the most uncomfortable, aggravating. And I'm sitting there going, here I was, all proud. I got my window seat on purpose, because I didn't want to have to get up all the time. Although, given now that I think about it, as long as he was in between us, if I was on that aisle seat, he would have fallen in love with me after he fell in love with the first guy like I was. So I think whoever was sitting around this guy, he was going to have a sleep affair with them on their shoulders. But I don't know if you ever had that happen to somebody when they start falling asleep. But this, I've had people sometimes, you know, their head may, you know, tilt a little. But this guy was just on my chest like he was snuggling up for the night. Oh, my God, that was a very, very odd thing. And thankfully, on the way home, I didn't have to have as crazy as a flight. I flew from Amsterdam to London, so at least I was going west, and then London back home. So that flight was a little better. But the first one, not only a wasted 2 hours going south to Dallas for no reason, but then I had this sleeper slash lover on my shoulder for 2.5-3 hours, 13 times, I believe. Did I say 13, 14? I'm not sure we remember. But yeah, it was unbelievable. So I guess the lesson to be learned is fly with someone you know. Take a travel partner who if they sleep on your shoulder, you won't mind. That's all I can tell you. Jim Toronto filling in for Matt Bubala this morning. We'll take a quick break here. We'll talk to Orion, and then we'll hand this thing off to the Big O and say good morning to you and take it from there. Jim Toronto. No switching.